We particularly are very happy that we are able to meet this way now. So, but before I make any remarks, the proper thing to do is for us to introduce ourselves here so that we know who's present from the members themselves first, and then later we will ask the department to do the same. Members, I'm going to ask you to introduce yourself. Tell us who you are and where you come from. In other words, where you, the organization you come from and the place in the country where you come from, so that we know who we are to here today. Who wants to start? Let me start on my right with my party, the African National Congress.
Chairperson, my name is Susanna, but I prefer to be called Susan Sebe from the ANC and from the Northwest Province in Rustenburg. Thank you.
I'm Joe Mduabandu Machoba from Eastern Cape in East London.
I'm D.W. Mahunda. I'm coming from Limpopo Province through the African National Congress.
My name is Adrian Williams. I'm from Mpumalanga and I'm from the ANC. I come from the Governor Mbeki Municipality.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. My name is Dalita Bushego. I come from Limpopo, African National Congress in Skukuna region.
Chair, my name is Peter Smith. I come from the IST from Durban.
Chairperson, I'm Dapane, normally called Fago, from UDL, Eastern Cape in Berlin.
Good morning, I'm Marcy Wenga. I come from Midval in Gauteng. I represent the Democratic Alliance.
Willem Duerman, Democratic Alliance, Cape Town.
Tazamile Bota from COPE, living in Johannesburg, Gauteng. I'm a 20.
From the department, who's going to lead us?
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, members. My name is Aldo Africa. I'm Deputy Director General in the department.
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members and colleagues. I'm Simpo Mgadi, Acting Deputy Director General.
Morning, Chairperson, honorable members. I'm Tozi Fava, DDG Corporate Services, Department of Cooperative and Traditional Affairs. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members. I'm George Killiam from the new department. NDMC, the National Disaster Management Center. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Nelly Lester, Deputy Director General in the Urban and Rural Development Program.
Morning, Chairperson, honorable members. My name is Dumin Ket from the department.
Thank you very much. we now know who's here. Okay, yes, right, yes. Yes. Okay.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and and honorable members. My name is Nhlakani Kontwana. I'm a special advisor to the minister. Thank you.
Morning. My name is Yusuf Patel. I'm also with the department, TDG for Free Basic Services and Infrastructure.
Oh, good morning. My name is Malunga Lojida. I'm from the department, CFO.
Good morning, Chair and honorable members. My name is Mbulelo Skaba. I'm the deputy CFO.
Okay.
Morning, Chair. Last one here. Yeah?
No, you're not the last one.
Well, from the department. Morning, Chair. Morning, honorable members. My name is Ongama Mashawe, also from the department.
Right.
Good morning, colleagues and members of the Portfolio Committee. Mandy Jacobs, Corporate Secretariat in the department.
Yes. Morning, Chair, honorable members. My name is Dion Isaacs. I'm heading the Deputy Minister's Office.
Chair Mokwena, Ministry. Morning, Chair and members of the committee. I'm Abram Sitole from the National House of Traditional Business.
Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. Thokozani Mjali from the Minister.
Good morning, Chair. I'm Lungile Nobaza from the ANC Research Unit.
Okay.
Good morning, all. My name is Sabi Mashile from DPLG.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Let's allow the two people entering the house to introduce themselves even before they catch their breath. Prof, you start. Do it even as we are standing.
So, my name is Wellington Kuruli Sobahle, Chief Director of the Department of Cooperative Government and Traditional Affairs. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Lindelo Dunjo, Area Province Eastern Cape, Area Nelson Mandela Organization of the National Congress. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, we will proceed now. Thank you very much. Members, my first statement is going to have to be that as we meet after the President has spoken, giving the country direction, what we need to do, and some of the key priorities has identified. So, but second to that, I think one of the most important things, at least from where I'm seeing things, we've been hit by disasters in our country. In one part or another, and some of this can be partly attributed to the impact of climate change. The extremes of weather are leading to situations where what otherwise would not have happened now happened. And so it's a mark of concern to some of us. If we say that we are creating a caring society, we cannot but be concerned about those developments, wherever they occur. And in a sense, they represent an important indicator of the effectiveness of the services we need to be giving to people. So our intervention as Parliament and as a department, for example, and as members generally, but as various government departments, have to have the results of protecting people from the hazards of nature and or those that are often referred to as man-made from happening. And this is one of the key departments that leads our country in that respect. And so I thought I should raise that because this is where, in a sense, we left off in the past, that it is going to remain a key focus of our area. It has major political economic consequences as well. It is a measure of our responsiveness It is a measure of defending the gains we are making through vast investment in infrastructure, where people live and so on. And so it's not just loss of life, but also loss of infrastructure that we are laying. So it has major strategic significance. We should not underestimate it. New as the department is, this is an issue that ought to remain at the top of your agenda. We consider it very important. And so we hope that the department and the minister, that we will have a good relationship going forward. We appreciate it that you've been able to come today so that we start the process properly going forward. We ourselves as a committee are going to have to measure the success we have, amongst other things, through the appropriate relationships that we have to have with the ministry and the department. In other words, we will ourselves conduct that assessment on our own, not only between the department and yourself, but also the relationships that we have within the committee, among the parties that are going to have to work together to do this work, but also the committee and its relationships with organs of civil society, organizations that operate in the sector in which we're doing work. From the chair, I can say it without hesitation that Parliament is very clear about becoming a true people's parliament, and that on our own, having been elected in the way we were, we'll continue to work with people who have interest in matters that we deal with, and will facilitate as much as we possibly can, given the constraints of budgets, which is what we're going to talk about today, to ensure balanced input in our deliberations, that the poor and marginalized receive the appropriate attention by way of their voice, their input, their concerns in what we do, in addition to the usually well-heeled who never miss an opportunity to make representation, which we appreciate anyway. So that's the starting point of the work that we're going to do. We hope we're going to enjoy good relationships across the board. I do also have to include among the stakeholders that we're going to have to interact with the media, who play an important role in communicating and dealing with issues that we deal with. The new name of the committee and the department, given the changes that have been made, underlies one of the key concerns that as government we must learn, government must learn to work together. As Parliament, we must ensure that this working together manifests practically, not just in the rhetoric of our language, but in the actions that we undertake, that there is evidence of collaboration and cooperation of spheres of government, not to mention the three arms of the state, but ourselves as individuals across political parties and in relationship with other stakeholders across the board. So members, you are welcome once more. And now I would like to invite the Deputy Minister to lead his team in the department with a view, with a word on behalf of the Minister, I would assume. Yeah.
Mayor Chairperson, members, start by congratulating you, Chairperson, on being appointed Chairperson of this committee. It's particularly valuable that you are, given your considerable experience of not just the legislation and parliament and government as a former MEC of local government, but also, needless to say, the very deep roots you have in the civic movement before 1990. So insofar as it's appropriate at all for Parliament to say this, and I'm not sure that it is, and I'm learning, it's tough, having been a chair for 13 years or whatever to play the role I'm currently playing. But if you like my heart, and it sounds terribly melodramatic, and Peter's probably smirking, but my heart remains with Parliament. I am still a member of Parliament, and I really want to say that insofar as it's appropriate for a member of the executive to say this, we think it's a very apposite choice for chair of the committee. I think it's partly because the minister and I are utterly agreed that we need a very strong activistic parliament for us as the executive to play our role effectively. We would really like, we echo everything you've said about the need to be more activistic in your initial statements. And indeed, the president of the country, the new president, that's been a constant theme of his, as you well know. Only yesterday in the House, in reply to his State of the Nation address, he made it very clear, as we who are in the House know, that he would like to see a more activistic parliament. I think members here know, too, that for the first time since 1994, and perhaps really in governments around the world, he is determined to have a performance management system by which ministers and deputy ministers will be evaluated. And we hope that that performance management system will be made public in flux. I'm not sure what the plan is, so that you too can monitor us more stringently. So you can be assured that from our side, we aim, like you aim to be an activistic parliament and committee, we aim to be an activistic department. We are determined to be that, and we think that it's important to have a very creative, constructive tension between Parliament and the Executive. You and I go back a long way, but and we are friends beyond being comrades, and we serve in a certain other party as well, in its structures, but that doesn't mean that we are going to be not playing our role to the fullest. And so we welcome your statement, and we really will also want to hold you to account, frankly, to haul us before you and play your role and challenge us, because we also feel that myself, you might gather later when the minister speaks for himself, that I'm allocated for now some sort of supervision role for the major legislative program that will unfold in cooperation with you. We're going to discuss these issues over time. And so I will try to attend as many committee meetings as I can. Sipokazi, are you here? No. Slavi, are you here? Will you hold me to that, right? That you give us the program and you'll see to it that I attend as many committee meetings, not to speak needless to say, to see and follow what you say. But I must also at the outset say that I convey apologies, sincere apologies of the minister. He could not be here. He's very keen to be here. Much of what I say will, in fact, I've conferred with him, not fully, but much of what I say reflects his view too. But he, as you might or not know or not know, the chair does, he is actually at a meeting of SELGAS, Assembly of Mayors. He's, in fact, with the president there today. This was decided some weeks back. And, in fact, we only got the notice on Monday, I think, that this day is a sitting day for our budget. So we think this is not an ideal situation either for your committee chairperson or ourselves as members of the executive. And we see this as only part of a process of your scrutinizing the budget of the department. This is election year. We have to finish the budget very quickly. You've had only one morning allocated to you this very morning. It's far too little. So we're saying we'll come again. In fact, you've set another date for us. But we would like also to tell you that if you feel rushed, so do we. This is a new department as will be spelled out by the officials. I'll give a political overview, and Elroy and others, Africa, you know very well, will deal with the specific programs and so on that we're working on. But it's work in progress. And we're very, very keen to hear from you, too, what you think are the boundaries of our expanded mandate, but more importantly, how we should implement it. In fact, there is a major lehotla looming of all stakeholders in local government. And I can't speak for the minister, but I would imagine at least the chair of the committee should be invited and report back to the committee on that. That's planned for later this month. In fact, this month of June, the minister has allocated his consultation month. We met with the National House yesterday. We have met with the trade unions last week. I think we're meeting with Business South Africa sometime later this week, later this month. So, in fact, we are very keen that we see this only as part of a process. No doubt you will bring us before your committee for the annual report. The minister will certainly be here. In fact, he's keen to be here at a later sitting. So I tell you his sincere apologies. and start by saying that I will deal with the political overview, and the department officials will then deal with the specific details. Firstly, I want to say that it's clear to us that the majority party, unusually, has got a 66% vote of the public electorate, which is rare in democracies today, on an electorate of voting base of 77% of the electorate, which again is very rare in democracies, Comrade Chair, even if not everybody who was eligible to vote registered, but even by that measure, it's very unusual in a democracy. The party has made it very clear, and the government's going to implement that, that our five main priorities, as you know, are to create decent jobs, to fight crime, to accelerate rural development, to provide for an improved health system, and to increase the efficiency and outcomes of the education system. But if, as was said earlier, we have a support of a very significant majority of a very activistic electorate, it's precisely the point to be made that that activistic electorate has reached levels of impatience that are concerning us as the department, as the ministry, and I have no doubt you're under even more pressure because you represent the people out there directly as the organ of people's power, and so you too will be under that pressure. But what we're saying is that while they voted for us in overwhelming numbers, what we get, the signal that's very clear, is that they certainly expect delivery. And we think these 5 years, Comrade Chair, are do or die years for this government and this majority party. And indeed, if we don't deliver in a significantly better way, correctly, the masses out there are going to begin to wane in their support for us. And that's the quality of a democracy, too. If a government doesn't deliver sufficiently and adequately, then the people out there must make other choices. And I think that we and the President know these are very aware of that. So we think these 5 years are perhaps the most crucial years of our new transitional democracy. If you look at the 15-year review report, which the government, no doubt your committee has looked at that also, look at it, it's very clear that the state, it is said, has to be people-centered and developmental in character. And in that 15-year review report, it is stressed that the emphasis has to be on building a medium and long-term planning capacity, building social partnerships in civil society, strengthening coordination, and improving capacity to implement. President Zuma has warned that the performance of public office bearers and officials are in the spotlight. You know that. I've covered that point. And in response to the 15-year review, and as part of the performance focus of the new government, there's been a reorganization of the state in respect of the government. You know, of course, the new ministries, certain ministries have been divided, others have been established newly, new ministers and deputy ministers have been appointed, and this was announced by the President on the 10th of May. And this includes, of course, the National Planning Commission, led by Minister Trevor Manuel, and the Monitoring and Evaluation Unit in the Presidency, which again emphasizes the stress of the government on delivery and on implementation. Now, we, as part of this reorganization of the government, have been renamed the Ministry and Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs. This is not a name change alone, it's an expanded mandate. Elroy Africa will deal with it in greater detail, but it's clear that we're talking to a person in your previous life as Sanko president and as an activist of the civics in the 80s. We're talking of cooperative governance, the term we acquired, in fact, from the work people like you and others have done. So we are very clear that the state alone cannot deliver on the mandate. People shouldn't just vote for us. They must become active in their ward committees, in their street committees, in their school governing bodies, in the community safety forums that are being established soon, and community policing forums. So when we talk of governance, we're implying a partnership of state and civil society. But of course, within the government, we can only play our role if we secure a cooperative relationship with the planning ministry in particular and the ministry and evaluation unit in the presidency. So we're shaping our mandate. We have prepared a paper which is in your files, I think. If it isn't, then you presumably will get a copy. And we would like to hear from you on how you think we must manage this relationship of cooperative governance and civil society in particular. But as Parliament, you should also have views on how we might want to relate recognizing ultimately it's an executive prerogative with the relevant ministries, particularly Planning and Commission, and Planning and Development, and the Monitoring and Evaluation Unit. We would also like to say that we, for now, are using the acronym CGTA. It's unwieldy, but various proposals have been much COCTA, C-O-D-T-A, COCTA, I can't even say these things, to imply the R is traditional leaders.
What you could,
yeah, we'll have to. So if you've got any views and ideas, this month is being spent of consultation. You are free as well. I don't know, Elroy, whether we can offer them prizes for the best award or what, but and whether that conflicts with the ethics and so on, and reporting and accountability issues around that. But certainly we encourage you to present your views on what you think our acronym should be. But for now we're using the term CGTA. And, you know, we'll come back to you later this month. Now, in the State of Nation Address, the President on 3rd June said, and let me quote, indeed as citizens, we should at the same time ask ourselves, he said, what is it that we can do on our own to help promote this national program? It's similar to what the Department and Ministry feels. And during the debate, the Minister said, yes, the Minister of Department, the Minister of Cooperative Governance said on the 4th of June, and I quote, we need to answer this question that the President posed as I referred to it a moment ago, we need to answer this question as elected public office bearers and as public servants in national, provincial and local government, as business people, as workers, as leaders of civil society formations, as religious people, as traditional leaders, as academics, as students and youth, as men and women and as patriotic citizens. Now, in setting our new expanded mandate, the Minister went on to say on the 4th of June, the Department will diligently and relentlessly play its role as the choir conductor of our system of cooperative governance. I did tell him, Comrade, as you know, that I'm a bit worried that the Deputy Choir Master Conductor is no singer at all, as my daughter will tell you, used to shriek every time I sang. Though, Minister, I used to point out that it's my constitutional right to sing. And it's a constitutional right not to hear. And we fought, Wyndham Hartley, for this democracy so that people like me cannot be tyrannized by our daughters at the time. Although my son, by the way, when he is in a good mood and I don't feel like singing, he sort of in his condescending tone will say, Dad, you can sing if you like. Yeah. So I say, well, you know, when I sang yesterday, you shut me up. You can't just suddenly sing. I did say something terrible that I can't repeat here, but for those of you who can imagine, I said, well, you can't F when you want to either, because often when you don't want to, it comes out, it embarrasses you. So just like that, singing doesn't just come, you have to be inspired, you have to be motivated. So let's see if the Minister can rescue me from my past. But, you know, we have looked at the DPLG it was then, and we have undertaken a rigorous assessment. We had a Lekhotla of the department some 3 weeks ago, and Elroy will report on it. There is a document called the Cog in the Wheel of Government, which is subject to scrutiny today and ongoing in an ongoing manner. Essentially, we feel, amongst the many reasons which I won't spell out, some of the problems, and you will probably remember that you drew, I'm sure, attention to the similar things that we did when I was chairing this committee, that there's no single authority in government that's really giving effect to cooperative governance, that intergovernment relationships are weak, despite the bill we act we've got, that the relationship in government and civil society is far from adequate, that there needs to be better regulation, support, and oversight of the provinces, and the developmental role of traditional leaders needs to be enhanced. So that is why we talk of the Department now of Corporate Governance and Traditional Leadership, because they will play an appropriate role, especially when it comes to rural development in cooperative governance matters. Now, our priorities that we're proposing, and you can think about this, is in the next 5 years, at least, the five priorities to build and strengthen cooperative governance in a developmental state. We are utterly clear that this particular ministry has a crucial role in both the planning aspects in cooperation with the development minister and in the developmental aspects in cooperation with all spheres of government, including civil society. We need to strengthen accountability and clean government. We will take heed, and I'm reading, you know, your reports and so on, and I'm interested to meet with the chair and at some other stage a multi-party team of portfolio committee in a, you know, more interactive way. I'll discuss that with the minister, but I have raised that with him. So we want to strengthen accountability and clean government. There's a program, otherwise we've got what, clean from clean government. Just say that into the mic so they can hear.
From clean cities to clean water.
2014. Yeah, but it's not just going to be a slogan like we normally do when we in the executive. And you're going to tell us, give us substance to it, you know. Accelerate service delivery and support to the vulnerable in particular. Improve the developmental capacity of traditional leaders. Foster development partnerships. Social cohesion and community mobilization. Within these five priorities, there will be a dedicated focus on fine-tuning the powers and functions of local government and provincial government and national governments across the spheres, cooperating with the public, and building the institution of traditional leadership. The department, of course, will expand on these priorities. We must stress we're in a transition phase. We're shaping our new expanded mandate. We need your help, your cooperation. We will spend the next few weeks consulting, as I said, and then we'll come back to you with a more sort of a finalized version, if you like. I really think that we have to stress that, you know, essentially, to summarize it, we are no more a department, just a provincial and local government. We are now a ministry and department of cooperative governance. One of the things Parliament has consistently pointed out to us, not least the committees are served in, is that departments are not synergists. Even when they bring legislation to Parliament, there are clauses in one bill that contradict an act that's just been promulgated and so on. So the President's very clear. He's got two ministers dealing with ensuring cooperation, and this department is aligned function responsibility, if you like, to ensure that cooperative governance. So our mandate is not just to deal with provincial and local government, it is also to deal with other government departments. We will, without intruding on the terrain of other ministers, without repeating some of the mistakes that were done in the RDP era process of 94 to 96, or the then minister and the presidency, we will, I'm finishing off, I assure you, we will, in fact, seek to the extent reasonably possible, and increasingly through cooperation with other departments and over time, seek to play a much more expanded role in ensuring cooperation across departments at the national level as well. And we will, not just yourselves as Parliament, we will, as the government, also be securing greater cooperation of the public out there, of the masses out there. And where possible, we need to work together in doing that. And finally, we will have a legislative program. I think every time committees are interested, there's one bill pending. We're still negotiating with all the stakeholders around it. It's basically an amendment to the disputes and claims around traditional leaders. And some of the ideas that are emerging, the minister's mulling over them. But in other words, if you like, it's the INSLAPO Commission that we have to look at. Its work is incomplete. What do we do? Do the categories of traditional leaders identified sufficiently capture the reality that the Commission has been dealing with? What should be the relationship between the Commission and ultimate decisions made by government? Those are issues that we're keen. If you have any views, INSLAPO, we'll be keen to hear from them on this Commission. Because the bill has to reach Parliament's powers that be before the 30th of June in order for you to process it. So we're under pressure, but if there's some ability or some space, Chairperson, with the permission of Elroy and so on, I'd like to suggest that you offer us your own views on what we should do with the INSLAPO Commission, as it was called, although he has since stepped down, but that's how I know it, and Elroy will deal with that when he deals with the program. I thank you once again. I look forward to a very cooperative, we, by the way, look forward, the Minister and I, and the entire department, actually, I commit the department here, honestly, on behalf of the minister, to working effectively with you. And if it doesn't happen, Comrade Chair, you contact me, and I will see to it it's done, or you hold me before your committee. And so you haven't delivered. Thanks.
Very much. We'll do it with the greatest of pleasure. thank you very much. We appreciate those remarks. They are very useful. They already point out to significant areas that we will have useful debates and discussions around. Thank you very much. Elroy, it's your turn to talk to us about the department now.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Deputy Minister, for that introduction.
Sorry, just to say, members, no, being MPs, you might be dying to say something back to the Deputy Minister. He's with us here, he's here. So there will be an opportunity a little later on to engage and interact around those issues. So hold your horses, in other words, yeah. Thanks. All right. Yes.
Thanks once again, Chairperson and Deputy Minister and Honourable Members. I can't resist saying that almost 10 years ago I found myself in a situation where the Chairperson and the Deputy Minister were also managing this meeting in Parliament. But I must say they were much younger and much more handsome then. But I think they have gained in wisdom. I'm trying to repeat myself now. So good interacting. But I think the kind of serious point we're making is that we are really pleased as officials to have leadership like yourselves. The presentation that we're going to deal with today is in your packs, in your files. It is the only presentation we are going to make this morning. What we have also done, Chairperson, Honourable Members, we have included in this file, as the Deputy Minister has already referred to, an overview document, strategic document that tries to amplify and get into some of the nuances about this new role and expanded mandate that we believe we have. So that's the one particular document that we have. Obviously, this particular presentation that we will speak to is in the pack, but then beyond that, what we also have, and this is probably the more important point to make, each of the branches in the department led by the respective Deputy Directors General have prepared a program-specific and branch-specific presentations, and this really deals with the detail of two things. One, accounting and reporting back to Parliament on the work that we've done. I'm saying it deals with the detail in that respect. And point number two, it also begins to give some indication of some of the detail looking into the next or looking into the current financial year and some of the things that we're committing to do. So I'm saying, Chairperson, that we have all of this documentation. We are really seeking an engagement on the full set of information we're making available, not only the presentation that we're speaking to. And unfortunately, I need to apologize for not having, on behalf of our colleagues, not having the pack with you earlier. Having said that, the presentation that we want to give today really has two parts. At one level, it's quite simple. We're going to account and report back to yourselves. We're going to look back to the financial year 2008-09, and secondly, we're going to look forward. And the overall structure is, as indicated on the slide, we will reflect on the work of DPLG the last financial year. We'll end off with what we referred to as some highlights and some important lessons, and then, of course, we'll get into the next part of the presentation, which is looking forward.
Chair? Sorry, I wonder before Elroy continues, if you could just, or somebody just comment on the absence of the DG. What is her status? Is she with us, or going to be with us, or is Elroy acting, or what's the position?
Sorry, the DG, unfortunately, we apologize on her behalf, cannot be here. And what we're doing is this is work in progress, and the minister has mandated the DDG, who actually is attached to his office, to deal with these issues, because he's taking primary responsibility for the new expanded mandate and the restructuring. And what we have said is that neither the minister nor the DG, as has been pointed out here, but the full team will be here when we have finalized this process, and you must please invite us, because the minister wants to be here, so that we deal with the process, and you can write a report as well on that city. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. So that's the intention, and that's the overall structure of the presentation. I've already indicated that we're going to look back, and then we're going to talk about some of the emerging priorities that we've identified for the year going forward. Now looking back the last financial year, the department, DPLG, we really had three high-level objectives that we were focused on. One, to really focus on policy development of legislation, obviously aimed at driving integration and enabling service delivery. Point number two, we also focused on, at a high level, trying to put strategic interventions and support initiatives in place to support provincial and local government. And lastly, we also tried to do our best to create a range of enabling mechanisms to get some communities to participate in our system of governance. At the highest level, that's what our work as DPLG was focused on. If you break that down, really there were a range of very specific things that we tried to attend to in the last financial year, from policy development right through to focus on traditional leadership, local provincial government service delivery, capacity building, public participation, stakeholder mobilization, monitoring and evaluation, knowledge management and innovation, and also, of course, ensuring that we have the internal organizational capability to do all of these things. Again, in giving effect to our mandate, those three high-level areas, we had a number of very specific objectives. And those very specific objectives, to some extent, not completely, but to some extent, correspond with the programs and the branches we have in the department, who are, one, focused on enhancing our governance system, in particular, intergovernmental relations. Point number two, to support the institution of traditional leadership. Three, to strengthen the capability and accountability of provinces and municipalities. And then also, fourthly, to monitor and evaluate and communicate the impact of our programs. And then lastly, again, as I said, to deal with the issue of our internal capability. Now that being the case, what we decided to do in this presentation is to report back an account on specific areas of our work in the last financial year. These areas do not in any way represent the full spectrum of work that we've undertaken. And that is precisely why we have these detailed presentations in the pack. So the next couple of slides really pick out, by and large and primarily, what we had in the E&E document chapters. In other words, what we committed to with National Treasury and to Parliament and to the country. So those are the specific areas that we are reporting back today, but as I said, it goes way beyond this. I've already indicated that this performance that I'll be talking to was really given effect to via these six branches that we currently still have in the department, as indicated there. I think it's quite self-evident. So the first area of feedback is to say that we made a commitment to work on a white paper on provincial and local government. What we did do subsequently was to prepare what we called a policy review on provincial and local government. This was completed, and we submitted this to the January Cabinet Lekgotla of this year. It is still on the table of the new administration, and we are waiting for further direction from Cabinet in terms of how we take this forward. The second area we want to report back on is that we have been providing support to the Democratic Republic of Congo in putting in place their system of local government and specifically working on what they call an organic law on decentralization. We have worked with them in terms of putting that legislation in place, and there are a range of other support measures that we have assisted that particular government with, including a conference on decentralization that we had in that country. Well, they had it with our support. Then we also made a commitment to support the institution of traditional leadership and to attend to the matter of the Khoisan. I can report that we have implemented and we continue to implement a program of support to this institution. Obviously, one of the important decisions that was taken was to establish this new Department of Traditional Affairs. But also what we've done in the last financial year was to give Cabinet a policy on the Khoisan, which has also been approved, which was approved in the last financial year. Item four, we also made a commitment to roll out a comprehensive skills development program. We have worked with local government CETA on this. And again, we can report to this House that we have prepared training materials and that we have tried to start the rollout of this program with the support of local government CETA. We have also focused in the last financial year on trying to get all of our 283 municipalities to have credible integrated development plans and also local economic development strategies. We can report now that we have managed in the last financial year, we have done what we call an IDP analysis of all IDPs in one particular province. That was in the last financial year. But in the previous financial year, we've actually done that for all municipalities in the country. So that is work that we've done. And obviously, local economic development strategies, LED plans, are integral to that. So that work, in our view, is still ongoing. Then we have a very important focus on service delivery, municipal infrastructure, to the extent that in that regard, we have really tried to play our role in ensuring that government meets the targets that we have set ourselves in respect of water, sanitation, bucket eradication, energy, etc. And in this area, we have done a range of things. We have developed a national strategic framework for comprehensive municipal infrastructure. We have also prepared, we should have said that in full, the CIP. CIP stands for Comprehensive Infrastructure Plan. We have been trying to work with all municipalities to prepare these comprehensive infrastructure plans. We've obviously developed a template there, and we've ensured that at least in 29 of the district and metropolitan municipalities, the CIPs have been completed. We have also assisted particular municipalities where they have been underspending in respect of the municipal infrastructure grant, and we think that we are making progress in that regard. And then in general, we think that we have also managed this grant fairly well, the municipal infrastructure grant. The next area we want to briefly report back on is the area of ward committees, support for ward committees. We have completed a funding model, and we have also publicly gazetted this for comments. And I think this committee, as well as our deputy minister has indicated, we would like to get specific comments on how we can better support financially and otherwise this very important institution. We've also developed a database on ward committees. Coming back to the area of infrastructure, we have completed a study on the implementation of free basic services. And this is also linked to a preliminary report that we've undertaken on the issue of indigent registers that all municipalities are meant to prepare. All of this is really meant to be enabling and to assist us in rolling out our infrastructure program going forward to ensure that we meet our various targets. In the last financial year, we have completed a national capacity building framework. The intention of this framework is to get everyone in the sector to better organize and coordinate our support to local government in particular. We have met with each of the 9 provincial departments responsible for local government, and in our view, they are really doing their best to also realign their capacity building programs. We have also made a commitment in the last financial year to support municipalities on improving their financial performance, and we have managed to provide dedicated support to at least 45 municipalities, although we are trying to work in general with at least 160 municipalities regarding their financial performance and their financial capability. Then also, Chairperson, we had a priority of trying to ensure that at least 150 municipalities complete an anti-corruption strategy. This was identified in the State of the Nation address last year. We can report this year that we have exceeded that target. About 165 municipalities have been supported to develop fraud prevention plans. We have obviously focused on a number of risk areas as indicated in that progress block there. Unfortunately, we have not managed to complete point number 12 and ensure that we have disaster management contingency plans for all of our host cities. It is something that we are attending to, so that is something that we are giving priority attention to. With regard to the Urban Renewal Program and the Integrated Sustainable Rural Development Program, one of the specific priorities we identified was to work with some of these nodes to prepare spatial development frameworks. We can now report that we have, in the urban program, we have worked with all of those urban nodes, as is indicated there, Alexandra, Galashue, Inanda, Kumashu, Mtsantsane, Kalichi, and Mtsantsane, and Motherwell. And then we have undertaken an assessment of spatial development frameworks in the Bushbuck Ridge local municipality. We have also worked with these nodes in trying to ensure that they've got some key strategic local economic development projects. And again, we can report to the committee that we have undertaken an analysis of some key projects in at least three of the nodes, as indicated there, urban nodes, and then in the rural development program, we've also assessed some key LED projects in those nodes that we've indicated there. Then, lastly, in this area of the urban and rural development programs, we've also tried to prioritize communicating and sharing some of the good lessons, positive lessons. And again, we can report that we have done a range of things here, from reporting regularly to Cabinet, issuing a very small publication, leaflet, brochure called Rural News and Urban News, and we've also had a range of workshops, knowledge management or knowledge sharing workshops for both of these programs. This is the last slide dealing with performance. We have also in the last financial year finalized a core set of local government performance indicators. And also we have improved and finalized data collection tools and instruments to assist us in implementing the 5-year local government strategic agenda. Point 17, we have refined and updated that local government strategic agenda to deal with the balance of the current term of local government, 2008 to 2011. And then, of course, finally, we have also given attention to improving the performance management systems of our municipalities. And we can now report that we have managed to increase the number of municipalities with performance management systems from 153 to 223 in the last financial year. And then, of course, the other important point maybe to make there is that we have developed what we call a Section 48 report, which really is required by the Systems Act, and is really meant to reflect on the state of local government in this country, and that is something that we have submitted to Parliament. So, Honourable Chairperson and members, this is the high-level feedback that we want to give in terms of the performance. I've indicated that in the files we get into substantially more detail. To conclude this part of the presentation, there's just a couple of other highlights we quickly want to mention. When our minister joined us in September last year, the new minister, one of the things that we undertook was a range of provincial visits. We interacted with three provinces, and the primary purpose of these provincial visits was to interact with our stakeholders within the local government sector and to get them to indicate what their challenges are, what their needs are, what they require by way of support. And in our view, that has been extremely valuable. We've got reports on each of those visits, and we're quite prepared to share that with yourselves. Point number two, we also put in place what we call provincial coordinators for a period of about 3 months. These coordinators working with our service delivery facilitators in the department, we have really managed to intervene quite decisively in a very short period of time in a range of municipalities across the country. And again, we've got reports on that, and we feel that there are a range of positive lessons that have emerged from that that's going to inform the work of the new department going forward. We can also report that since the launch of Project Consolidate in 2006, we have deployed and mobilized a total of over 1,200 professionals to work in various municipalities throughout the country. The DBS ACN Zamanje is central to this particular area of work. Then we can also report that in the course of last year, we have managed to obviously work in very closely with our provincial counterparts. We've managed to bring down the vacancy rate of what we call our Section 57 managers. These are both municipal managers and all those officials that report directly to the municipal manager. That is what we refer to as Section 57 managers. We've managed to reduce that vacancy rate across all municipalities to 12%. We think that is quite a positive achievement. So those are just some additional highlights. These are the last couple of slides looking back, and we want to argue that looking at the last year and even beyond, there are a number of important issues and lessons that are coming to the fore. And thanks to our Deputy Minister, he's already referred to some of them. The first point that we want to make, it is quite clear from our perspective that there still remains in many areas a lack of clarity with regard to the issue of powers and functions and how that should be shared across and managed across the different spheres of government. And that has got a direct negative impact on our service delivery program as government. Point number two, we also believe that notwithstanding the good legislative framework we have in place on intergovernmental relations, we think that one of the weaknesses is that it is voluntary in a number of respects, and we feel that we need to tighten up and strengthen some of the areas of the regulatory framework pertaining to this area. Then we also want to submit to this committee that we think our work on hands-on support has also given us some good lessons through Project Consolidate, but also there have been quite significant weaknesses, and we would be the first to submit that. One of the key weaknesses has been the lack of sustainability of many of our interventions that we've put in place in the last couple of years. Then we also would say that to this committee that service delivery remains a core challenge and priority. And that is why if you look at the budget slide later, you would see that the resources that we've set aside for the municipal infrastructure grant continues to increase over the medium-term period and we believe beyond. So we really still need to prioritize that particular area. Then point number five, we also want to indicate to this House and to this committee that our assessment of local government, the state of local government in 2009 is not positive at all. Our minister has spent almost a month in the Northwest Province doing quite a thorough assessment of each of the municipalities in that province. And the overriding and overwhelming conclusion is that the health of a municipality is not good at all. And again, we've got those details at our disposal. We also are arriving at the conclusion that the capacity of many of our provincial departments responsible for local government is not what it should be. And we think that we need to do much more in terms of supporting not only those departments, but the role of provincial government in general, to better play its role, not only with regard to local government, but also more broadly in taking forward the priorities of this government. Then the two last points by way of high-level lessons, we also have the view that there continues to be a high degree of a lack of accountability. There are many instances of fraud and corruption, and we are just very concerned about the information that we continue to be to get exposed to, and there are a number of interventions that we're proposing to deal with this going forward. And then, of course, the last point we are making, Chairperson, is that in our observation, when it comes to the local government function and support that we need to render in this country, we are of the view that this function is currently fragmented and dispersed throughout government, And one of the priorities we want to identify going forward is to have a single window of coordination when it comes to matters pertaining to local government. That is something that we really want to focus on going forward. So that concludes the first part of the presentation. And I know we are taking some time, but we really feel, on the one hand, we are new committee members, but also this is going to be the only presentation that really tries to pull together all of our thinking and our performance. Now, the final part of this presentation, Chairperson, is about looking forward. And again, the Deputy Minister has assisted by indicating what those five priorities are. So what I will do is immediately just very quickly get into some of the detail with regard to those five priorities. So the first priority that we've identified for the next financial year and beyond. By the way, let me indicate that these priorities, we've identified these priorities as being relevant for the entire next term, the next five-year term. So it's not limited necessarily to the current financial year that we're in. The first one then speaks to facilitating an integrated and responsive system of governance within the overall project of establishing developmental state in this country. And here there are at least four things that we think we need to action and give attention to. Firstly, we are of the view that we need to work very closely with the National Planning Commission, headed by Minister Trevor Manuel, but we believe that it is our responsibility to really take responsibility for operationalizing the work that will be undertaken by that National Planning Commission by focusing on provincial growth and development strategies and also integrated development plans. So in that respect, you know, we would continue to have a major and even an increased focus on development planning across the three spheres. Secondly, we're also of the view that we need to give greater attention to spatial planning, to land use management, related to work within the context of this national planning framework. And again, we feel that this department should be that single point of responsibility for all matters pertaining to this area of spatial planning and land use management. Thirdly, we are saying that we want to find ways of strengthening our current legislation on intergovernmental relations. The Deputy Minister has referred to that, and I'm once again re-emphasizing that, and I will come to some of the specific areas later. And then also, we are of the view that we need to find ways of strengthening both the institutional and the cooperative governance capability and capacity of provincial government and local government. There are a range of specific things and areas that we think need significant strengthening. So that's really at a very high level what we intend to do. Chairperson, I think I need to say up front that because of this transition period that we're in, we have not been able to be quite specific on exact time frames within the next financial year. But what I'm indicating now are things that we're definitely going to be working on within the next financial year. The next priority number two, is to strengthen accountability and clean government. And here again, the four specific things that we want to focus on is, firstly, to find ways of improving our monitoring and oversight over provincial and local government. We have a number of ideas and suggestions in that regard. One of the specific things we want to try and explore is to find ways in which we can get ordinary communities to participate in the oversight of local government. Our minister feels quite passionately about that. Secondly, we want to have a dedicated focus on fighting corruption and promoting ethics and integrity, both at the political level and at the level of officials in local and provincial government. And again, one of the proposals that we are putting on the table is we are putting a proposal that speaks to something called an inspectorate for provincial and local government. And in our view, that inspectorate will give us a bit more clout to be able to intervene and deal much more decisively with some of the problems that we are aware of. I've already indicated we want to deal with accountability systems and find ways of making local government and provincial government much more transparent. One of the things we're going to do in this area is to look at the current regulations and legislation that we have on performance management. And we want to find ways of strengthening that particular legislation and regulations to deal with the performance management of our officials, particularly in local government. Then lastly, on this slide, we want to launch something called Operation Clean Audit, but as I indicated earlier, we really want to deal with two things here. On the one hand, we want to link an objective that says we need to have clean cities, and clean municipalities, but link that to a program that says we want to also have clean audits across all municipalities and, by the way, in all provincial government departments by the year 2014. Now, what we intend to do here, Chairperson and committee members, we actually intend to launch this initiative in the next couple of weeks. The intention is actually to launch this in the month of June. We are busy finalizing that with the minister, but this is going to be quite a high-level program that we are going to work quite closely with the Office of the Auditor General on. The third priority will be to find ways of accelerating service delivery and supporting vulnerable groups in this country, and in that regard, we really want to focus on the quality of infrastructure, the quality of our services. We want to be quite clear about the nature and extent of the backlogs and how that continues to be a rolling challenge for us. And it is precisely for that reason, Chairperson and members, that we have undertaken earlier what I referred to, these comprehensive infrastructure plans. We want to have a situation where every single municipality has got this plan called a comprehensive infrastructure plan, and that plan will, amongst other things, it will detail quite clearly the extent of the backlogs in this country. Then, secondly, we want to find a better way of getting our infrastructure program in local government to lay the basis for economic development. We feel that link can be strengthened. And also there are a number of lessons that have emerged for us from the Urban Renewal Program and the Integrated Sustainable Rural Development Program in that regard. In fact, I can just deviate quickly and say that we have worked very closely with the Business Trust on something, on an initiative whereby we have undertaken an economic assessment and profile of each of the 21 urban and rural nodes. And that, in our view, lays quite a good basis to understand what interventions we need to put in place going forward. We will also, in this priority, continue to support various vulnerable groupings. My colleague sitting next to me, Dr. Mgadi, she is responsible for getting municipalities to focus on priorities related to youth, the elderly, the aged, our children, those suffering from HIV and AIDS. So we're really trying to get our municipalities to mainstream their programs in dealing with these various vulnerable groups. Obviously, we want to continue to improve our disaster management capability. We have a National Disaster Management Center. There are one or two specific things we want to do there to continue to strengthen our capability at a national level, but also working very closely with provinces and with municipalities. Then lastly, in this area, we also have a particular role to play in ensuring that the 2010 FIFA Soccer World Cup becomes a success. Our minister, by way of example, he chairs something called the Host Cities Forum. That particular forum is constituted of premiers and mayors of all of the host cities. And really the intention of that structure is to ensure that from a governance perspective, there are no blockages and constraints to ensuring that we do everything in our power as government to ensure that this is a success. And our minister is the person that drives that within government. The fourth priority is really to give greater attention and support to our institution of traditional leadership, and the particular emphasis we want to make here in this priority is to focus on building the developmental capability of this particular institution. We feel that is the particular emphasis that we need to give to this area. Firstly, we are saying that we need to find ways of integrating this institution, the traditional leadership institution, into our overall system of governance. I think there are many debates in terms of whether we have got parallel systems of governance. Our view is that we have a single system of governance, and the institution of traditional leadership is integral to that single system of local governance. We also believe that there are certain aspects of this institution that requires transformation. And again, we can speak to some of the details on that. But then also we believe quite strongly that this institution of traditional leadership must really begin to play a stronger and more decisive role in matters of rural development, promoting peace, fighting poverty, and also promoting indigenous knowledge systems and assisting us also in combating the spread of HIV and AIDS. And then, of course, lastly here, we also want to ensure that this institution develops robust and healthy relationships with a range of other civil society organizations and other organs of state. Chairperson, the last priority that we believe we need to focus on in the next 5 years and in this year in particular is one which says we want to build and develop a range of constructive development partnerships. We want to promote social cohesion and also community mobilization. And there are a range of specific things that we want to do. The first thing that we want to do is that we know that the ruling party of this country has got 5 priorities. This government has translated that into its own set of priorities. And I'm saying that to make the point that as we work with a range of partners, we want to ensure that we've got a shared development agenda. And as the Department of Cooperative Governance, we believe it is our primary mandate to ensure that common development agenda is understood and owned by government and key partners. Secondly, we want to continue to ensure that we earn the trust of our communities in the work of government. And again, there are a range of things that we want to do there. And I've already referred to the work on ward committees. Then I think also finally, Chairperson, point D, we want to pay greater attention to matters pertaining to social cohesion, building non-racism and nation building. And we believe that the commission dealing with religious, linguistic and cultural rights is absolutely key to that particular area of work. And we actually believe that they can do much more than what they're currently doing. So we're going to be having dedicated interaction with them in that regard. The last point in this slide is that we will continue to work very closely with our friends and partners in the international and donor community. They've been an important source of support for many of our programs. And in that regard, we want to renew and revitalize many of our programs. Chairperson, coming to the probably the second last section of this presentation, we just want to now pull this together and just give a sense of what this means by way of the budget going forward and for the next financial year that we are already in. Now, the first point to make about this slide is that the budget as presented is structured according to the existing organization of the department. And I'm making that point to say is that as we are sitting here, we are currently going through a process of reorganizing the department. So it is quite possible, Chairperson, in fact, it is definitely possible that by the time we probably interact with yourselves, we would have reorganized ourselves. So we just ask that the committee just take that into consideration. But coming back to the budget, I think the first point to make is that for this year that we're about to enter, we will have a budget of 35 billion rand, and that budget will grow incrementally over the next 3-year period. If you look carefully there, yes, the budget is slightly less than the budget of the last year. And the explanation for that is linked to the local government equitable share. We have taken, National Treasury has taken money out of the equitable share that will now be reallocated to our metros and some of the districts, I think, for the fuel levy. So that is that explains why the budget has been reduced. But other than that, we believe that there is a consistent overall increase in our budget allocation to attend to our various priorities. The next slide really speaks to 99% plus of our budget. Of that 35 billion rand, the overwhelming majority actually is transferred to various entities and local government in particular. So if you look at that left-hand column, Chairperson, the biggest grant, obviously, that we manage is local government equitable share, 23 billion rand, and I've explained that reduction, and the CFO can probably add to that explanation. We will continue to manage the Municipal Systems Improvement Grant at 200 million, and then also the Municipal Infrastructure Grant at 11 billion rand. So those are the key grants and transfers that constitute the bulk of our budget. Then this last slide on the budget simply makes reference to some of the key associated institutions that we also transfer funds to. These include SALGA, the Municipal Demarcation Board, South African Cities Network, the commission that I've referred to earlier on dealing with religious linguistic rights, and also the Commission on Traditional Disputes, and then also the National House of Traditional Leaders. And again, Chairperson, you can see in general that there is an overall increase in the allocations that we're making to these relevant institutions. Let me just make one general point. One of the priorities that we've identified in a recent departmental lekhotla that we had that the Deputy Minister referred to, we have basically agreed that one of our areas of weakness as a department is the extent to which we have exercised oversight over these institutions, and that is one of the areas we're going to give greater attention to in this financial year and beyond. Chairperson, this is my second last set of comments that I want to make, and I think this is directly relevant to the work of this committee. The first point to make about the next two slides is that the areas requiring legislative reform and refinement, and obviously we're going to be working very closely with yourself, these areas that we've identified will probably occupy us, in our view, beyond this year. So they will probably deal with the next 5 years. So what we have not done here, but we will do very soon, Chairperson, is that we will come back to yourselves and identify which of these areas we would want to prioritize in the current financial year that we're in. The Deputy Minister has already referred to one particular piece of legislation that we're going to refer to. So let me just quickly highlight some of the areas that we have already identified that requires some type of legislative reform and involvement with yourself. Firstly, we have indicated that we're indicating here that we need to fast-track legislation that currently sits within Parliament on traditional leadership. That for us is a priority. Secondly, we are also putting a view on the table that says we need to think about putting primary legislation on the table to replace Schedules 4 and 5 of the Constitution. Thirdly, we are also of the view that we need to have a more coherent set of legislation to better govern and regulate provincial government in this country. Colleagues will know that when we talk about local government, you can mention the one or two pieces of legislation that coherently regulate local government. The same cannot be said for provincial government, and that is precisely why we are making that point. Point D, it is our view that based on our experience of the two-tier system of local government since the year 2000, that we need to, in one way or another, we need to reform the two-tier system of local government. The first point, we are saying that we also feel that the intergovernmental fiscal system needs to be reviewed and refined with the objective of creating a more viable system of provincial and local government in particular. Point F, and this is linked also in part to what our Deputy Minister referred to, we feel that we need to strengthen current legislative provisions that enable national government to intervene in provincial and local government. The next point, we also believe that we need to better separate the legislative and the executive functions of local government. We feel that this has been a major source of many of the problems and challenges that we see in local government today. So continuing with some of the important areas, point H, we feel that we need to strengthen the regulatory framework regarding performance management of both elected representatives and officials within local government in particular. I referred to that earlier. We're also indicating that we may want to reform the regulatory and funding regime as it pertains to ward committees, and the process that I referred to earlier is integral to this. We also believe, Chairperson, that we need to find ways of strengthening and reforming the regulatory regime or our legislation as it pertains to supply chain management. We feel we can actually strengthen that to preempt and avoid some of the problems that we have pertaining to corruption and fraud, etc. Then we are also of the view that we need to review the current legislation on fire services. This legislation is quite dated. And then also, point M, we feel that we need to find, through law and through other means, ways of standardizing how different provinces deal with this institution of traditional leadership. We find that provinces deal with this institution in different ways, and that is also creating problems within the system. Then second to last, we feel we need to review the Organized Local Government Act that has given rise to SALGA. We feel that there are quite a few lessons we have learned over the last couple of years, and we feel that maybe we need to review that piece of legislation. And then also we feel that we need to look at possibly reviewing the legislation on the commission dealing with religious and linguistic rights. So, Chairperson, that is quite an extensive list. I've indicated that we will come back to yourselves with the leadership of the Minister and the Deputy Minister, and we will be much more specific in terms of what we'd like to prioritize in this current financial year. But we thought we'll kind of be fairly transparent with yourselves in putting our full set of thinking on the table. The last slide, Chairperson, really just seeks to get this committee to better appreciate the current process that we are involved in realigning and restructuring ourselves. And again, I'm not going to get lost in all of those points. I think literally just to make two points. One, the department is currently involved in a reorganization, realignment process to give effect to our new expanded mandate. And in that regard, there are a range of specific things that we are doing that are reflected from points 1 to point 7. But in our view, we would like to have this entire process finalized by the end of August. So, Chairperson, that then would constitute the presentation that we'd like to present to this committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Elroy. Members and the department and others, let's have a see that coffee there, the comfort break, tea break, and sort of try and find ways to get the presentation gelled and then come back to ask questions. How many minutes? I'll give you 10. Yeah. 10 minutes. And please, let me not go and marshal you from wherever you are back into the house.
How are you?
Fine, how are you?
Fine.
Hello.
I'm only one, but I'm going to take a look at it. Yeah. Shall we start sitting down? We've expended our 10 minutes. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We will not come back reactions to the presentation, which has been very helpful, throws light on the previous department progress across areas that were identified and related budget allocations, and speaks to the changes that are in the pipeline, given a change mandate and so on. One of the reasons I like the change name has to do with the in the responsibility of dealing with intergovernmental relations. This specifying of provincial and local government to the exclusion of national government is a bit odd, because often the guilty party are national departments themselves, as many of us can attest here in our interaction around this issue. So calling it cooperative governance firstly includes the department itself and how it relates with the other spheres, but also the job, as I understood, for example, in the report you gave us in the past, of the roadshows you conducted to speak to the department to demonstrate in practice and give indications of what plans they have that relate to local government, so that there's appreciation of that relationship. So this is the first reason I think I like this reference. I hope it will actually translate into practice. My fear, Elroy, that in the remarks you've been making through the number of slides, you've constantly referred to provincial and local government, even in the new mandate going forward. And I'm afraid that the assumption that national government actually has wisdom, national departments and so on, is problematic. Because we know that some of the departments do not have the capacity they ought to have. Consequently, some of the problems that manifest in local government actually derive from this lack of capacity, including negotiations capacity. And then they may be tempted to want to use legislation to go and drive shortcuts to solve problems they should be negotiating around. And this would be my greatest worry around that issue. This point is important. You see, the moment you use the word around, and I'm picking up points from across your presentation that I find highlight some of the issues that we should be worried about and involved in the debates that are going to go forward. The
the nature of the relationship, intergovernmental relationship, being voluntary. If we diagnose the problem as being that it is because they're voluntary, the opposite part of that is that they should be compulsory. They should be compulsive, perhaps, which might produce results that are better. And is that assumption correct? And I want to maintain no. Compulsion doesn't. We should not substitute what should be done by hard negotiation with legislative compulsion. And here's my next important point that illustrates the point dramatically. As we speak, there's a crisis looming about the Property Act. 150 municipalities have not complied. Only the remainder have complied. So potentially, as it is reported elsewhere, they will not be legally acting properly if a remedy is not found, like urgent, to close that gap. That they were meant, it was in the law, since they're supposed to do this, to raid property, you must do it under the following legislation and so on. And those who have not complied, it means they will be doing it illegally if that date comes, as we understand the situation. And I find that it's missing in your interventions here. So maybe you'll give us an explanation. I don't know, so please explain to us that. But what it shows, it tells you that even where there is a law that seeks to produce certain results, government departments and entities often can get away with murder and not do it. So just some observation of the past 10 years in practice and elsewhere, that although law is intended to bring about a change in behavior, it does not always succeed. It requires other interventions of a different kind. So qualitatively, we need to engage in a discussion from those who are affected, who may not have complied, to actually find that perhaps they have a different diagnosis of what the problem is, and that a solution might be very different to what we are suggesting or contemplating coming up with. let me also address as a final comment, and then I'll ask members to ask questions. The ESCO, NERSA is undertaking public hearings and so on. And this has a direct impact on the finances of municipalities. Understandably, SALGA is mad at the effrontery of ESCOM to think it wants to impose the 30% increase, however legitimate, in its opinion, that might be. Isn't the law saying that, in fact, I should be saying that properly the minister should have tabled this request of ESCOM to Parliament so that public representatives engage on that issue. Now, you as a shop steward of local government, among others, you have not insisted through the ministry that the colleague of the minister must do that. In other words, submit to Parliament a request for consideration of this request by ESCOM to impose, so that Parliament itself takes a view on that issue. Now, in the previous period, this has happened outside these public hearings. When they occurred and run by NERSA there, and we have not participated in it. This is a view of the law that might maybe be contested, but please check it. Nelson Mandela Metro has a view on that that is in line with what I'm saying, and I suspect they might be correct. So I'm already giving notice that Parliament will not want to be marginalized going forward around that issue. You as a department have a cooperative governance responsibility to ensure that that happens. that NERSA as a public entity is doing its job. You should do your job cooperatively to persuade the minister to see that he's an important role. He probably is not aware, or if he's an with you, you have agreed to on excluding the parliament from engaging in this important area of work, of this being the platform where that debate also takes place. Now, what I'm suggesting is not to say that NERSA should not be doing it, but that principally and primarily this is the first platform where it should take place, even if it takes place there as well, in whatever way. So that's a remedy that I just thought is an important area, given that this matter is before the public now and has major implications on the finances of the municipality and therefore on service delivery. Now, members, I'm opening for questions and comments. I started with my party at the beginning of introductions. I start with the opposition this time. And especially one without her. Domen?
Oh. Thank you very much, Chair.
And then I'll come to Peter Smith, because I'm in the board, Honorable.
Yeah. Yeah, Chair, I've congratulated the Deputy Minister in the passages some time ago, but just to formally again say that congratulations. He was our Chair. He assisted, or he played a very, very big role in drawing up all the legislation since 1994. So we're looking forward to a very good relationship with him, and his input will be massive, I think, because he understands what's going on. He produced a report, he pressed Parliament that they also publish that report in a booklet. And I hope you will have the opportunity now to implement a lot of those things that that we suggested in that report under his leadership. Chair, of course, yeah, there's a lot of questions that we can ask about the presentation. I just want to touch on two or three things. First of all, I wrote you a letter last week about regulations that the Minister issued on the 11th of March on the Property Rights Act, and I just put the request that that regulation should be explained to the committee, and also that that might be an opportune time that we have a presentation from the department about all the regulations that have been issued or what is in the pipeline. And referring to our oversight role, I think that this is a very important thing, because we all know that we make legislation, but the regulations can substantially influence those laws that we make, and we must have report back on that. And I think you've touched yourself, Chair, on the problems with the implementation of the Property Rights Act at the moment. So that is the first thing I just want to ask. How you as Chair going to deal with that, and we as a committee. The second thing I just want to touch on is the Integrated Sustainable Rural Development Program. What is going to happen with that since we have now a new Department for Rural Development? I would just like clarity, because that is a broad thing that we must attend to. Then, very important, just the disaster plans. The department is not actually responsible for drawing up those plans itself for 2010, but just to coordinate it. I just wanted to have some clarity about the role of the department in this regard. Yeah, then, Chair, I just want to point out there are some burning issues, as you pointed out, the request before NERSA. We have then also a lot of boycotts at municipalities, not paying their rates and taxes and service counts and so on. And this is also something that we need some action from the department so that we don't undermine municipalities in the long run. Thank you very much, Chair.
Yeah, I'll try to do the same thing then. Also, I'd also likewise congratulate the units, but just publicly to say, a very good choice, a very dedicated man, worked with him for many, many years, and I think he's going to bring a huge amount of experience to bear on what this committee does. So, good one. Chair, I also have a couple of comments like you on the new name change. I mean, I know it's expanded mandate. The question I would have also is the extent to which the department will be in a position to fulfill that mandate. I mean, if you recall, we've been, until now, DPLG for 15 years, but the P never in reality existed. It's actually been a Department of Local Government, despite the name being provincial and local, and despite us as a committee repeatedly over many, many years trying to get a greater focus on the provincial element. It never happened. So the name change by itself is not going to do anything. The real issue is have an expanded mandate, yes, but how do you give effect to that? And one of the I think the very last slide Elroy is on, we didn't have a chance to look at the detail. I know the detail would come, is the extent to which the department needs to be capacitated to give effect to the mandate. I mean, what are the implications for staffing? What are the implications for policy development and a whole host of things? How do you go about giving effect to it? I realize today we can't do it because we've got very constrained limits on time. But I do think there's some questions there that we could pursue. But sure, one thing in the name that does slightly puzzle me, and perhaps the Deputy Minister might be more, I'd say, with the rationale than the department, I'm not sure which. But if you recall, this committee last year, or in fact last couple of years, has been of the view, and Cabinet seems to have accepted that the traditional affairs should have been a separate department. Remember, we had this whole discussion where there would be a Department of Judicial Affairs either located in the presidency or self-standing. And in fact, even as late as December last year, Cabinet was saying that is the case. There will be a department. It didn't necessarily say self-standing. But, well, the way Aurore gave the expression to just now is as if it is a department now because it's tagged onto this department, it is a department, which may be the case. I'm not really sure terminologically if that's correct or not. But when he was speaking on the budget, and he said, oh, see how the budget's gone down from 35 to 34, whatever the figures were, and the explanation was equitable share, and so on and so forth. In fact, if you look at your budget in the Red Book on page 673, on the last line, it actually says that the lower growth of the medium term is because a new Department of Traditional Leadership will have been created, and two new public entities in the fiscal transfers program will move to a new department. So the implication when this was published, the Red Book, was as of now, there would be no traditional affairs sitting where it is now. It would be somewhere else. So my question is, what happened? And is this permanent or is it a transitional step? Then, colleague, moving on maybe to the question also on the expanded mandate. You know, when we talk about, for example, interrogating provincial issues, I'm not quite sure this is the question, does it include or does it exclude issues to do with the division of revenue? Or do we compartmentalize those to other departments? I say that because right now, as you sit here, we have a budget crisis. I mean, departments have overspent on health by huge sums. KZN alone has got a 2 billion rand deficit on health spending. Free State's got a gigantic one. Now, is that within the ambit of cooperative governance? Does this committee, does this department play a role in facilitating something to do with budget crisis, or is that left to Treasury and to others? So, you know, what is our scope? If you look at backlogs, even at the municipal level, the huge backlogs in infrastructure, and provincial too, you know, schools, school building and so on and so forth. Is that part of our ambit, or is that somebody else's baby? I'm not quite sure what it means when we talk about that we will interrogate, you know, provincial issues and corporate governance. How do we compartmentalize it? And then, colleagues, too, you know, there are some other things, just a little few specifics that we haven't had time to look at here, but I'm sure that would be an extended version. In our last strategic planning meetings with the department, you know, there's this discussion about the department setting up this whole M&E kind of project program, which is meant to be a transversal one, not purely within the department, but it had a sort of brief to go abroad. What is the link with that program now with the new, Chobani's M&E program? Does this one here in the department fall away, or does it get integrated into that, absorbed by it? What is the relationship there? Then also things like, for example, you know, the Deputy Minister made reference to the five strategic priorities of government, and the ruling parties in government. But at some level, I don't see a direct link between those five priorities and the program that's being presented? Yes, I mean, I do see it some ways. But if, for example, you talk about, say, job creation as the first one, what in the presentation specifically spoke to job creation within this department? I didn't see anything. If you speak about some of the others, perhaps they're not appropriate. Education may not be appropriate. But crime might be. I mean, you know, if you look at crime, is there any role for the traditional authorities? Is there any role for expanding policing beyond the metros? If you look at job creation, for example, the Treasury report, this blue book here, what we've all got, says very clearly that municipalities are actually effectively failing their role in job creation. The number of employees is dropping every year, not increasing. And they play a minimal role in the expanded public works program. These are issues I think one should speak to as well if you want to reflect those five strategic priorities. And Chair, then the last thing is to agree with your statement that you can't force cooperation. It's an oxymoron. So corporate governance has got to be cooperative, not forced. Once it's forced, it's no longer cooperative. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm new here, but I must be honest, I come from local government, and I quite frankly don't believe the department telling us all these happy statistics. During the election campaign, we did door-to-door, and the people on the ground are very, very unhappy. And I'd like to know whether the department actually has an idea of actually what is really happening on the ground and how bad the service delivery is actually on the ground. And perhaps the department can deploy its 256 senior staff to do door-to-door so they can actually get a real sense of what's happening on the ground. Also, Chairperson, in this document that was mentioned just now, that's on page 673 in the blue document, the department spends 54 million rand per annum on external consultants and professional services, and only spends 2.5 million rand on training and development. And I'd like to know what exactly they spend this 54 million rands on. And it seems that every year, the second biggest budget allocation is on consultants and professional services, when in fact it seems that the department has just evolved into something that's just become a consultant's paradise. And these consultants are not accountable to us. And so I'd like to know what exactly these consultants do. Because if the department is spending so much money on consultants, and yet on the ground service delivery is not happening, what do these consultants do? And, that's my question. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to check with the error that I understand when he presented, he did mention that some of the information we need might be in the bigger file. I just wanted to be sure on three issues that are really very there, because they will also assist us when doing our oversight work. And it's when he referred to the IDP analysis report that was done through all the municipalities. Is that report inside the file as we speak now? And also the document on the better support that will be done for the what committees, and the study on free basic services. The other issue that raises the concern is the issue of disaster management, as indicated in his report, that is not achieved. And my understanding is that by November 2009, the structures must be in place. Will we be ready by then? And what are mechanisms in place in preparing for ourselves for the 2010? Because if we have to make some inputs on the document ourselves, we must at least have a draft in time before the time frame comes. And then on the issue of the infrastructure grants increases, we also appreciate that most of the money comes from this side. But the worrying factor is that as much as you refer to the capacity building, the workshop held, the most key important issues, especially in the municipalities, is that do we really, as much as you give them this money, do we really have a person who is well-educated or capacitated or skilled to do the job? Because you can pile the money there, but if the person there does not have qualifications to execute the task. The task is too big for the person. You can capacitate the person, you can workshop the person, you will still have a problem. You must also look into the kind of people who are dealing in this aspect. Thank you, Chairperson.
Understandably, Chair. I wish to congratulate you, Chair, on your appointment as Chair of this committee, and I know you understand this business very well. I also want to echo my colleagues to congratulate the Deputy Minister on his appointment as the Deputy Minister of the Department. I think I want to start by saying that the challenge that this department is faced with is very huge. And I think it all obviously will require all of us to work together. But I think we're going to have to learn from the past experience of the 15 years and also revisit some of the other international experiences and best practices that we've seen in other countries. I just want to support you, Chair, on the comments you've made in your opening remarks on this debate, that whilst intergovernmental relationships may not be working as smooth as we would want to see, to try and coerce and put that in legislation would be very dangerous. And I recall in my past history when we were drafting the Constitution, we looked at a number of countries when we were modeling our own Constitution. And one of those countries was Germany. And I think quite a lot of examples were stolen from Germany and Canada for this constitution when we were doing the intergovernmental relations. And we all agreed that it should be a very soft federal structure with intergovernmental relationships that are not rigid like your American system. Now, negotiation in that soft arrangement is very, very important. Now, I'm looking at the issue of the vertical and horizontal relationship between or intergovernmental relationship. The chair is correct in saying that it's not always the vertical relationships that don't work. It's actually the horizontal relationship that don't function properly as well. By that I mean, for example, let's take the IDPs. At implementation level, what coordination exists between this very department and departments like housing in the implementation of the infrastructure on the ground? That's one. Two, you find in many cases departments are unable to spend their budget. I'm talking now at the horizontal level. One province is unable to spend money on housing. Another province is actually spent all its money and has got a shortage. Why can't you transfer? I'm talking about the role of this expanded mandate of this department. Why can't we negotiate the transfer of the money from the province that is not going to spend the money to the province that has spent its money, is actually looking for money to build more houses for our people? Now, these are some of the things that I know that might be a controversial statement to make, but in my view and my experience in this sector, I believe that this thing is doable and it should be looked at by this department. Very lastly, I have not heard the department talk about the issue of land tenure when we talk about planning in the rural area. Because services in the rural area sometimes are hindered by the form of tenure and the traditional institutions that exist there. Because on the one hand, there's a role of traditional leaders that says, we want to do things according to our traditions, There's the constitutional mandate that says we must deliver services to the people, and there's always sometimes tension here in terms of providing that infrastructure and providing some of the services. It's a matter that I think needs to be addressed and addressed fully in order to ensure that the rural areas are not left out as we deliver in the urban area. I think I'll leave it at that for now.
Thank you, Chair. Now if I'm intimidated by the Chair. I want also to echo, to congratulate the Chair for his appointment, and also the Deputy Minister. As much as we serve in different areas, I was asking the Minister if I should say which other party am I coming from, and I'm not quite sure whether I will be allowed. I don't want to be called out of order. But I'm also coming from the South African Communist Party. Yes. We are new. We have different experiences. We've got different experiences, Chair, as activists in this area of we are still struggling to say Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs. We always refer that as local government. We've given different experiences as activists. And maybe my challenge was that when the department was going to make a presentation, it would also try to simplify it so that we understand. Not that we don't understand, but to so that we're able to understand some of the things. I'm saying different experiences because, as Atene said, when we were doing door to door, it was scary. It was really scary. And you'll ask yourself as an individual, as an activist, if there is a fear of local government, what is it that this fear was doing, and what has then been the relationship, what would then have been the responsibility of national and provincial government? I want to start by saying that, and we think we're more humbled. We'll go through this, and we'll again come back and ask some questions. Linked to that, Chair, I don't know whether it's allowed that if, as a member of the committee, I would like to get some information from the department, am I allowed, or should I do that through you? You'll explain that yourself and the minister, as he was a former chair of this. On the political side, as the Deputy Minister has said, yes, the President said there's going to be monitoring and evaluation and whatever of executive. Who's going to monitor us here as committees and MPs? Do we fall into the same? I'm raising that because we have got a very important role to play in terms of oversight, which is dual. As public representatives and as activists, meaning our postal organizations are to do that. But here, what's really going to monitor? How are we going to be? If we are not doing the work, who's to tell us? So I'm sure the DM will explain that. In the report, I would have loved to, same in the echoing Adrian's concerns, that you have, yes, in the report, you have been doing a consultancy. You are not saying in your report that you are going to face the role of the consultants. I'm coming from the public service. I'm one of the people that were very hard on the Department of Public and Service and Administration on employment of consultants, because in fact they have done more harm than good in terms of service delivery in our country. And therefore, I do think that maybe in the next presentation or outside this, if we are able to do that, please tell us, if you are doing away with consultancy, what are you putting in place? Because I've always been of the view that it's not that there are people who can't do the work. I was listening to the Premier of Gauteng yesterday. I was very impressed about what she said, in terms of that in her province, they're going to do away with consultants. So I think we'll hammer it in different ways. The last thing, two last points. You have not, you're in the report, it's silent on this notion that there is going to be, that this administration is looking into implementation of one public service. What are the implications? What in your view as the department is to be done in terms of achieving that goal, remembering that there are different views on the ground by workers, trade unions, and how best then are you going to assist the Department of Public Service and Administration in ensuring that we have got a smooth transition into that? I'm saying smooth because, as a former health worker in a public institution, a worker in a clinic in municipality, remuneration, conditions of service, whatever, has not been the same. Can that be, as the DPSA chair, if then that is allowed, that at some point in the next presentation, maybe the DM will also say that, can that be simplified so that we really understand. The last thing is this hands-on. Pardon us, we are from, it's our maiden speech. This hands-on. What is meant by that? I haven't seen it in my municipality. I'm coming from a municipality which is riddled with controversies. Nelson Mandela. What is the hands-on? So that we really understand when these coordinators, whatever, and we have got a broader understanding of our oversight role in terms of this level. Thank you. So I hope I haven't raised some controversial issues. Or
even if you do, that's your role. That's why you're an MP.
Thank you.
In this committee, anything goes as long as it's within proper bounds of decency. That's the only requirement. Otherwise, if it's intellectually heavy, even the better. Yes. Just two. Any other question? Anybody wants a question? Member? Ms. Wenga? Are you happy? Okay. Domain represented you well. Okay. You want to take the last bite? Okay. Quickly. No, that's fine.
I just wanted the presenter to touch something on recession. How do we assist the municipalities?
Okay.
How does it affect them?
Okay, good question. Global connection. Now, we've got about 15 minutes, I assume, or something like that, towards 1 o'clock and so on. I just want to check, Elroy, the single public service story was not in your list of legislative intervention. Now, I'm raising it in that way to suggest there are areas of collaboration that you have in which you do work, such as in that one, where you are working with other departments to introduce legislation. So in responding to that, explain to us other areas where you haven't said so. You've also, the President mentioned the Land Use Management Act. There's some reference to it there and so on. And we do want an explicit indicator of your working together to ensure that there is effective input in the drawing of that legislation from this particular department. And finally, Peter's question, the ISRDP, that's another area of collaboration and so on. And we assume that it's going. Can be debated. Yes. Yes, you want to start, Eunice?
By you.
Yes.
But what might help is we quickly, obviously, firstly, the questions have been extremely good and very challenging, and in fact, they're helping us, and we're going to come back to you. So we're going to be brief, but it might help if I sort of try to respond, and then Elroy comes in, and we do it quickly.
Yeah.
Will that be okay with you?
Yeah, I'm okay.
Okay. So the first thing is, let's deal with this major issue just raised, Chairperson, on the single public service. You know that Cabinet's taken some, is negotiating a decision around moving local government administration, the human resources and local government administration, to DPSA. Now, our minister is very clear that to do that will undermine the cooperative government's expanded mandate we've got. And we are very keen. If you can also assist us, and you can also talk with your counterparts in the Public Service Committee. So on that issue, I think we will come back. Presumably you're going to invite us to a one-day sitting where we go through. Can we deal with that there? But in short, that matter is still being negotiated. Then the other theme that comes out is, what exactly are we up to? Again, Peter, you'll be very... do you want to add anything on that public service? No. Okay, each time I reply, you can just add, right? Secondly, on the issue that Peter raises about the... we really need the Department of Local Government. Absolutely right. I think more after I left this committee, under your leadership, you've been raising the provinces. We're very pleased to know. The minister entirely agrees. And what we need to look at, I'm surprised you're raising it in a way, Peter, because, you know, you might be worried that national government is being too intrusive. So I think when we discuss these things...
That's his purpose. He's worried.
Yeah. So we're going to do it in a way that does not undermine cooperative governance. And I think there's a misunderstanding. I don't think Elroy ever intended. You're right. As you said, Chairperson, there can't be, what you said, use it very nice, there can't be legal compulsion.
Yeah.
You use the word like it's almost, the term is internally inconsistent. No, we agree. All we're simply saying is that we need to tighten cooperative governance. We need to secure greater cooperation. But you can't have a developmental state unless you have a stronger civil service as a whole,
yes,
and the three spheres are interacting. So again, comrades here, friends, I don't think there's going to be a major issue of difference. And we will give and take on that issue, but we're not going to compel. I mean, that will be absurd. And really, we must say, on the other hand, even this committee will agree that there are times when, if local government hasn't got the capacity to deliver, you can't just stand aloof. Because the victims are the ordinary masses out there who come from all of our parties.
Yes.
So, in respect of Section 139 and 100, we want to engage with you. We'll read your ideas, particularly your NCOP comrades and friends, about how, maybe Peter will even agree, we need to intervene more decisively, but to strengthen local government, not to emasculate it. So, do you want to say anything on that, Elmer? Once I finish each answer briefly, you can just put your hand up on the chair, well, so we can do it quickly. No, sorry, I mean, I'm a bit worried, actually.
You need, it's utter democratic. He doesn't change.
Everyone understands the area there. In fact, you do. Let me be upfront. I've been out of the loop for 5-6 years. And really, you know, people...
We'll pick it up.
You'll be surprised how much I don't know. But can I just say also to thank the two opposition members, in particular the one, Peter, I worked with for many years. And it's nothing to hide, Comrade Chair. I've said this maybe even to you, or certainly to Ruth Bengu. I must say, as far as Peter Smith goes, he's been one of the most outstanding opposition members. I don't agree with him many times. He's really been good. Now he's blushing. Look how ready he is. But I will tell you one thing that's going to come.
He's afraid he's going to lose his job.
No. I told his leader one day, passing. He nodded his head. His leader, I told his leader one day. But I'll say this to you. One simple insight, which I think is important to communicate. We were going on a study tour. The chief of Rotan said, no, Peter ends up with every study tour because the IFP goes. Do you know what I did? I said, no, if Peter doesn't go, we don't go. We're at a study group meeting. I've got a mandate. But if Peter's not going, then we're not going. Because you know what? The person who was going to come on came from one of the other parties who never turns up. So I really think you've got, in Willem Drommel, who's the experience of local government, you've got very good opposition members here. And this is Mila, whom you know as well as I, and for those of you who don't know, played a major role in local government, in civic affairs, and was a provincial director general in Eastern Cape. But I really like what you said, Chairperson. It's a good question. It says that I think this is where you must also hammer us, right? You see, you're saying we want to take a more expanded role. You agree. The problem resides at the national level often. And Elroy has said that there are many departments that deal directly with local government, for that matter, without working with us. But then you raise a very poignant question. You say, fine, you want to expand the role. Tell us. You can't even do what you allocated to do now. How? Just how are you going to do it? Where is the expanded capacity? We are excruciatingly aware of that. In fact, We want you to hold us to account. And we, Arwa does speak about new skills. If you look at that founding document that is called the cog in the wheel, you'll see we talk about the need for new capacities. And frankly, if some of you want to come and join the executive, now the chairperson is going to get upset. Please, there will be vacancies looming soon. And, you know, Arwa spoke about a single window of coordination. Is that the word used? And the cog in the wheel of government, although we must convince others, comrade chair, that we are the cog after all. And so we're not asserting ourselves to be the cog. We're going to negotiate with people. And we are the Department of Cooperative Governance. So let me assure our colleagues from opposition parties, we have no intention of... the point you make, which I think is absolutely correct, and it's stunning that we haven't said anything. 150 municipalities, you say. See, this is the way a committee, it's very good, comrade chair, that you're picking that up, have not been able to implement the Property Rates Act. Now, those of you who are around, Peter, you'll remember 320 hours at least on that property rates bill. I think it was one of the longest number of hours, except for the TRC bill. We then brought in, comrade chair, you were busy in the provincial government, but at MEC, even make meetings, you know. We brought in technical experts, valuers, can you value individual properties and freehold, what's that, title deeds of, what do you call it? You know, each, when you, my mother lives, the simplex structure.
Sectional titles,
they said they can do it. You'll remember it was on the eve of the election, Peter, we insisted Salga's workshops with Jackie Manchu and so on. So on the eve of the 2004 elections in June, they had, I think, five or six at least provinces having workshops. The fact of the matter is, that we are unable to implement the bill, notwithstanding all the provisions we put in, even 4 years from the date of promulgation. Now, we have to. This matter has been raised by the committee chair with the minister. We have asked the department to look at this, and I think we must come back. Shlavi, are you here? Can you note that? I'll come back to the chairperson later today. We have to do something. The chairperson raised with us whether there's any way, since they won't be able to do it, Mishnak, whether we couldn't have a regulation or something. I don't think it's possible to expand the number of years or how we manage this process. Can we come back to you this afternoon in a little thing, and can we maybe meet you in 2 weeks' time? But that may be too late. Can we ensure that we give a response within 7 days? I'll speak to the minister today. Do you want to say anything on that, Elroy? The proposal is that it's not going to be possible. Can we do something? Slux, can you say something?
No, thank you, Chair.
I think it's true that the municipalities are struggling, and one of our experiences is that in the rural areas, the traditional leaders have been having concerns as we relate to the implementation of this, and some of the issues is to try and deal with this particular matter, and make sure that we are able to deal with these issues on the ground. Some municipalities have their policies on the ground as to how do they evaluate certain areas and how they charge them. But I think it's one of the things that we'll be looking at, because the contestation especially is more in rural areas where people feel that really they cannot afford some of these charges. So it was clear when you had the provincial visit to the minister, the traditional leaders were very keen to us to say, look, they are very uncomfortable with it, but I think we need to deal with this particular issue, especially in those areas, those people that are indigent. And to say, how can we expect people in rural areas who cannot afford to pay more? And it's how probably we assist municipalities to understand the implications of the very same act. But I think it's something that we'll be dealing with within 3 months' time, make sure that we finalize them. In certain areas, that disputes like in KwaZulu-Natal, and we're trying to facilitate that issue. Thank you.
The issue of the chairperson raises the issue, which I think is very crucial. How can ISCOM go there without some role for SALGA, Parliament, and so on? Elroy, can you come in here? I don't know the relationship between regulators, government, and Parliament. It's quite challenging. But it doesn't seem to me to be a problem why, not Parliament as a whole, but why can't ISCOM appear before the Minerals Energy Committee and this committee and any other relevant committee and present its case to Parliament as well? Can you comment on that? On the issue of ESCOM, NERSA, etc.
No, I can't necessarily give clarity on the procedural requirements. I'm aware, for example, what the city manager of Nelson Mandela was saying, when he was saying the current process is unprocedurally, it's unlawful, and so on. So I would suggest through you, Deputy Minister and Chair and members, that we actually go back and do some homework in the next day or two on this and come back.
Just,
note that. Can I also say, Chairperson, in a previous life, not so long ago, when the minister appeared before our committee for each budget, we would actually put in the report the 10, 12 things. And he was great. He would come and say, last year or 6 months ago, you raised the following issues. He used to actually reply. Can I commit our minister doing the same? When you do your report on this meeting to Parliament, can you raise all these issues? And we will reply not next year. When the minister appears at an appropriate time within 3 months, to be fair, let's say early in August, we'd like to suggest that we can't prescribe to you, or in August, before the end of August, we come back and reply to all your questions. You all are here, and we do so. But I will raise that with the minister, and Schlachsi's advisor will too. The next issue is regulation. Yeah.
Thanks for picking. You're learning fast. That's the tradition the department does. So the minister will be taking on to a very good practice. Good. Thank you very much.
On regulations, I entirely agree with William Durbin. This chair, myself, we've been we feel that what departments do is what they lose out on in legislation. They try to slide in through the back door. We try to slide in through the back door. I must take responsibility now. We try to slide in through the back door. So watch out for us. The previous speaker, before the previous speaker, she was very clear that actually this thing of regulations shouldn't just be tabled as far as possible. You know, Johnny Nilanda used to do it for justice. And I did it when I got into that committee, that the regulations as far as possible should be brought to Parliament, and sometimes for endorsement, sometimes it's an executive terrain. You can't, I know you'll say, hey, Eunice, what are you saying now? But the truth is there are some things, even when I was a chair, I said, are the specific prerogative of the executive. And we will fine-tune that. But insofar as the regulations are concerned, can we report back when we come back? Elroy, do you want to say anything about the regulations of 11th of March?
No, Chair, I think you've covered that because that was linked to the Property Rights Act. So we'll come back with the response on that.
The next question the Chair raised, and somebody did, Mr. Willem Drummond, is about ISRDP. Does it go to Rural Development Minister? But I think, actually, can I just suggest, it's my own thinking, I'm not sure that it's correct. I would like to couch it carefully. I think you must remember that we're a Ministry of Cooperative Governance, which means that though some aspect or other may, through negotiations, be handed over, we mustn't undermine the point you made, Chairperson, which is that we must play this role. Somebody else said departments just go to local government and do their thing and not even confer with us. So we need to find a balance between recognizing we have a new ministry, but remember it's a split ministry, it's not a totally new ministry, and the fact that we, not least your committee, needs to ensure that there's cooperation across the spheres, which includes also land. But Elroy?
Because it's a crucial point. I attended the first briefing of the Minister of Rural Development to his committee, and I raised it with him. I didn't get an opportunity to raise it in the meeting proper, but saying that, you see, the department is piloting in Greater Giyani.
Ah, yeah.
All right? Yeah. Now, the 21 notes were identified by government as the poorest of areas in the country and therefore an excellent opportunity for government to learn to work together to make the biggest impact in those areas around poverty. Now, I maintain that intention remains the intention of even this new administration. And therefore, when you introduce a Department of Rural Development, you are actually saying that you are taking on board lessons from there. So what I wanted to know was whether that is happening effectively, and if not, why not? That's the question I'm raising. Whether you have had a discussion with people in that department, I know they don't have any department to write home about yet. So, but at ministerial level, there has to be discussions about that issue. But also, focus wealth is important. But also, it would be odd when there's a rural department to have a rural. Sections of some department dealing with rural areas, unless there's a very clear boundary about what it is that we are dealing with as well. So in a sense, that's what we're trying to ask. We realize that these are new developments, they are work in progress, but we're already, alerting us to the reality that issue seems like the lessons that this department has learned are important lessons on which the new Department of Rural Development must build on going forward. Okay.
Elroy, do you want to respond to that?
Yes.
No, thanks. certainly, I think I can fairly confidently say at the level of the ministry and the minister and people that report, you know, to him in the office, we have not interacted with this new department on rural development. So that's point number one. I think point number two, there is a structured process in government right now that is trying to manage the migration and the movement of functions between these various departments, those that have split, the new ones, and so on. In fact, today, as we sit in here right now, there's a high-level meeting debating exactly those issues. The last point, three, that I want to make is that, as far as I know, and the Deputy Minister can refine or undo what I'm going to say here, but my understanding is that the Minister has indicated that he understands that this new department will definitely have an impact on our current program, ISRCP, and I think the initial view that he's offering says that that this department of ours must at least try and retain some what he refers to as some core competency around rural development. But I think he definitely recognizes that we'll need to work quite closely and support this other department. Thanks.
Yeah, Chairperson, we don't think anything inconsistent.
Around traditional department or that deals with traditional issues. The overlap with the rural development is clear. And so, part of the reason why, let me put it the way I actually should have done it, communicated it, that right from the onset, even before the details are finalized, an indicator to the new people coming in, that, by the way, there's something rural we do. We don't know what's going to happen, but bear in mind in whatever thinking you are doing as you begin your work. That's communication. It's useless if it comes after the horse has boarded. So its strategic relay to the appropriate people is what I'm talking about. Because then it would be embarrassing if people speak and they don't include that in their calculations. We asked. We are responsible for this rural development elsewhere. Now that there's greater gear, what about us in the 21 areas? All of us ask the same question. What are you going to say if you're not briefed about that in the first place? So I'm just pointing out that it potentially can create that problem. All we're saying is that even if there's no finality about the matter, but the communication of what the nature is, so that the people can be looking at it in the meantime, so that when they engage with you, they know what you're talking about. Yeah. Okay, thanks.
Chairperson, I really think it's useful what you're saying. On the issue of the disaster management plan for 2010, Elroy?
Thanks, Chair. I think maybe just to correct that slide. In fact, my colleague was trying to assist me as well making the presentation. We have apparently assisted at least five of the host cities in putting those plans in place. So that point is actually much more positive than I was indicating. We're definitely making progress in that regard. So I think that's the response, Chair. Because the question was, why has there not been progress? I am now correcting that to say that there has been progress. That's what I'm doing in response.
I think the question was, the responsibility for that is the municipalities. So what on earth are you doing there by assistance and stuff like that? I think people wanted to understand that. Yeah.
The next big thing is around
thank you, Chair. Yes, it's correct that we are coordinating the contingency plans in the municipalities, in the host cities. And it is, in fact, correct that before the 31st of March, due to the pressure exerted by the preparations for the Confederations Cup, five host cities have come up with their contingency plans. It is a difficult job because we have to do it through the provinces to convince the municipalities, the host cities, to get ready for the 2010 FIFA World Cup. Chair, if I may just add, I'm elated, if you'll allow me, I'm elated that in the beginning this morning you referred to disaster management to be elevated to another level. I think every time a disaster occurs, we are under the impression of the suffering of the people out there. And I think we need the capacity at national level to deal with that. There were talks in the department that you know, disaster, the NDMC or disaster management would become a fully fledged branch. We are chief directorate at the moment, and I'm glad you were supporting that. We will be looking for your support in that as well in future. Thank you.
Thank you again.
I mean, in my earlier response, I was meant to respond to you because I really think your opening remarks are absolutely on the ball. I can see a member of our department canvassing here. But that's what Parliament also is. I don't think there's anything wrong. But I think you're absolutely right, Chairperson. On the issue of Peter's question, are we having a separate department of traditional leadership or not? I think essentially there's further negotiations taking place. There are various options. There is the possibility that you could have two departments, one minister. At this stage, it's clear that the minister is going to be held politically accountable to the president and to the country for traditional leadership. So I'm not sure, Elroy can say, but I don't know that he ever was proposed a separate ministry. I think the notion was a separate department, because I remember speaking to the minister concerned at the time, fleetingly in the House, and he said no at that stage. But remember, he was speaking at a particular moment in a fleeting 30-second exchange with me in the House, that the understanding then, about 9 months ago, when I read it in Business Day of all places, that in fact it's going to be a separate department within the ministry. There, in fact, only yesterday we met the National House of Traditional Leaders, where we raised with them, there's a concept paper being worked on, it's work in progress, about the various options that are possible for taking forward the resolution that Cabinet took last year. But it's work in progress, and we will report back to you, and you are free. You may have different views on it, to express your views to us, either in written form or verbally, and I'm in the House as well, the Minister is, but I can't speak for the Minister whether he wants to be, he's busy. You can always come to me and say, hey, this is what I think, but the ANC as a study group will no doubt, the opposition parties, they will go through the chairperson and so on. So at this stage it's work in progress, and one thing is certainly clear though, that traditional leaders even now, without this matter being taken substantially forward, the issue of a separate department, are going to have a much more enhanced role. And the minister has repeatedly said that they are the key actors, presumably in cooperation with the people there, in rural development. The next thing that was asked, are you going to anything, Elroy, about the separate department? The next thing is, are we going to also, when we talk of interrogating, as Chief has said, provincial issues, look at the DOR, Division of Revenue?
I think maybe two different kinds of comments for trying to respond to that. I think that the first point that I understand the minister to be quite passionate about, and we have tried to internalize this as a department in our thinking about realignment, is that we definitely need to give much greater attention to provincial government as a sphere of government. I think that's point number one. And there are quite a few things that we are considering. One of those elements to give expression to that seriousness is to quote-unquote to provincialize the department. What that means in practice is that we are very seriously considering putting in place 9 provincial offices whereby we can have literally a physical, tangible presence in provinces, which will enable us to do at least 2 things. One, to work very closely with provincial governments in the first instance, and 2, it will allow us to interact much more closely with municipalities. So I think that is the kind of one part of the response to this question around provincial government. But on the fiscal side, I think we are also beginning to say that that we want to look very closely with Treasury, look at the intergovernmental fiscal regime and even the legislation that applies here, and that's linked to the Division of Revenue Act. I think one of the matters that we need to be much more clear on as a department is how we will interact with sector departments that have got major concurrent responsibilities with provincial government, e.g. Department of Health, e.g. Department of Education. But I think if I understand the minister's point of departure, he's saying that this department, new department, we are not the department responsible, or we are not going to interact only with departments of local government in provinces. We are going to interact with provincial government as a government in its totality. think that is the kind of point he's making. And immediately makes that point, then we as officials need to answer a range of subsequent questions, which say, how do we then interact with those other sector departments within provincial government? And one of the ideas, the proposals that we're putting on the table that we discussed in the Lahotla that the Deputy Minister referred to as the department, we are saying we need to maybe think of putting on the table something called a sector coordination framework, something that will allow us to meaningfully interact with the sectors, both at the national level and at the provincial level. And I would like to believe, Chair, that we will definitely need to work quite closely with national treasury and provincial departments responsible for the treasury. But what all of that means, it means I think we must be able to have some serious impact on matters of over-underspending in specific sectors, but at the same time not play the role of being the relevant national sector department that has got concurrent responsibility. So the short point I'm making is that we want to come and work with provincial government as a sphere of government, and we need to find ways of interacting in a meaningful way with the Office of the Premier, with the Department of Local Government, and all the other departments in the province in a way that will add value to their work.
Then shouldn't staff of the DBLG go door-to-door? That's the question. I like the idea, but it's got to be consistent with the public service ethos and norms, and we shouldn't open our door to being criticized by opposition parties that civil servants are being used to campaign now, and so on. So maybe we'll have to go to mainly Afrikaner areas and all that, but really, in a way, what you're saying, we should be activistic. Well, I said at the outset we should be, and we will, and short of literally going door to door, but that's something I'll raise with the minister. In consistency with the norms of a civil service, I don't see a problem, but I can't speak for the minister. You know, that's a matter we'll raise. Lobby will remind me. The next question, do you want to say anything about that, Alma? Okay, the next thing is, this thing about a consultant's paradise, not accountable to us. I like that, you know. It's a wonderful phrase. And you're right, consultants are never brought before us. But given the expanded mandate of... He's a special advisor. given the expanded mandate of the department and given issues of capacity that you raised, for a while at least, we will have to rely on consultants, and over time, in negotiations with you as well, we can prune that down. The president said only recently this weekend, I think, that we're tired of consultants. In cabinet, it's been raised. So I think in the meanwhile, while we seek to do that, we will never end consultants altogether. That's a fundamentalist view, I would imagine. But we will reduce it, but very crucially, we will ensure that there is skills transfer. The point you make very poignantly, 254 million on consultants, only 2.5 million on training. I think, can we note that, Shlav? That must be raised for the minister, really. Although he might want to add. But for now, what we could do in the meanwhile, I think there should be full accountability of consultants to the committee. Secondly, I think that you should question productivity of consultants. It's state money. It comes from the fiscus. You have a right to ask, and we will give you fuller reports. That's your right. Thirdly, I think you must remember that where we have consultants, it's the department official concern that's responsible. He or she might also have to explain, how have you transferred the skills from your consultant? Sometimes it's not so much that we're using consultants, so much as they're not productive, they don't deliver, and most crucially, they don't constitute a source of empowering the officials in the department. So one criteria that we should have in the consultancy transaction, or what you call it, agreement, is that if they don't deliver skills to our department, they don't get paid. So maybe you want to hold us to account in that regard, but ultimately, it's not the department official. It's the minister and myself. Well, mercifully, it's the minister. I can always wriggle away and say, I'm merely the deputy. So it's wonderful to be a deputy minister. You're not a chair. You don't have to take accountability. I know the plan programs and get plugs and so on. I don't know where you did that. I would check the plugs are there and, you know, all that. It's wonderful. It's wonderful not to be a minister, actually, because then you're not accountable. You know, basically, it's the minister that's accountable. So if somebody comes to you, you just say, well, I'm not the minister, you know. Now, somebody might interpret that to mean, I want to be the minister, but hey, let me tell you, it's a nice job. Okay, next thing is, do you want to say anything about consultants?
Just a small point here, but Deputy Minister and Chair. Now, I think the only point I wanted to make on this area of consultancy is that the department actually has got quite a rigorous process, and maybe the challenge is to make it even more rigorous. But currently we have quite a rigorous process of where any manager, any component in the department must motivate and explain why we are outsourcing something and why we can't do it internally. So I'm trying to say it is not something that any manager just decides arbitrarily and they do that. There is quite a managed discipline process, but I'm saying, Chair, that maybe I think it's something we need to look at with even greater rigor. Thanks.
Want to say on this issue, it is legitimate for government, part of our overall strategy, even as of the new administration, is to build the capacity of the state to carry out its responsibility. But that capacity includes working well with others outside of the public sector who have skills that we don't have. And the challenge is how we do that effectively. NGOs, you know, and structures like those that some of us operate in as well, in addition to being public representatives, often because of their specialized capabilities, do things that relate to government. And we must talk about that. And I think the point that the Deputy Minister raises is very important. What is the quality of input that they are making? In other words, what was so qualitatively different to what the department itself could do that we should be doing? And it raises questions about the quality of employment, human resource development and strategy. So the relationships there are very critical. So we need to do that, examine it carefully and so on, communicate it in a manner that ensures that the relationship with others outside of the state continues, but on a different basis. The quality of input is a critical one. But then the intention, even in those relationships, is to build the capacity of the state, finally, and not a continued dependent. As a civic leader, we used to tell NGOs, please keep your suitcase ready. You might have to go anytime. That's the sort of attitude that we're talking about in ensuring that happens. And I don't know whether you've exhausted your... The last two people. But, okay, yeah, go ahead.
See, if you put in your report the things that I also say, then I'm held to account. When the minister disagrees, you always say, oh, the deputy said that. It's all right to say that. But I think you put in your report about consultants, and we will account to you. The next quick thing is an IDP analysis report. Quickly, Elroy.
I think if I understood the question, there are some reports available, the one board committees and the study and feedback services. I think in general we should be able to make these things available. That's my general answer on that. Thank
you. Professor, you know what we could do, since planning is so crucial, it's one of your areas of interest, I know, and there's a planning commission as well. What we might want to do sometime is to look at in the committee at the IDP analysis report, and you can interrogate it, and then we meet with the planning. Is there a committee that's equivalent to the planning ministry? Not yet. Eh?
Mm-hmm. No.
So if there's no committee, we do it, and then we ask officials when they've been employed down the road to have a joint meeting with our department officials and your committee. Mm-hmm. And what committee?
Sorry, I'm not sure, Chair. I thought that the question was also whether we can make available some of the information that we had, like a funding model. But I thought that is available, but we can definitely make it available again.
What, again, this is another area of interest of the Chair in particular. Why don't we look at this later down the road? You call us in and we discuss with you how we're looking for a very proactive role for ward committees. I know the Minister has really decisive views and some quite innovative ones. And it'd be nice, even if he's not here, we can discuss and get your ideas, because I know you have a lot of interest in this. And without ward committees being more powerful and effective and capacitated, local government ain't going to work.
Yeah.
Is that okay? Okay, the next thing then is on free basic services, Yusuf.
Okay, I think basically it's reports that we have done. We have reports that we can make available where we've actually tried to see how our municipalities providing free basic services, the extent to which they're doing it, but also looking at the indigent registers and the quality of those indigent registers. Some interesting things coming out from there, but we can make those reports available.
And on infrastructure, there's a question.
Yeah.
I think on the infrastructure side, clearly a lot of this is related to any of the service delivery challenges we're having in the municipality. So what we had in the report that Elroy looked at was to strengthen the IDPs with these comprehensive infrastructure plans. We think that's critical. We also want to move beyond, you know, knowing what the backlogs are. I think these plans are telling us we have a fairly good idea of what the backlogs are. The issues are moving much beyond that. It's about beginning to actually look at the practice of how we do life cycle infrastructure management, operations maintenance, how we finance and budget these things, how we link services to municipal finances, and issues even like the problems of poverty and indigence is actually then impacting on the revenue base of municipalities and their ability then to maintain infrastructure, etc. But we also, the other thing we're looking at with regard to infrastructure is around the MIG and the funding. Again, you know, there is a resource constraint. We need to put more funding in the system. We're not necessarily only going to find it through the fiscus. So we're going to have to look at ways in which we can, you know, maybe even leverage the MIG funding. There's discussions around, for example, pledging the MIG funds for financing projects. So we're looking at those kinds of options. There's also the new infrastructure cabinet committee cluster that's been set up. And one of the priorities that they're going to be looking at is how can we look at new ways of dealing with the problem of infrastructure, but also a lot of the challenges around infrastructure in the rural areas where there's specific kinds of problems in terms of the terrain and the cost of infrastructure and accessibility issues. So there's very unique problems with providing infrastructure in rural areas, and that new cluster is going to be dealing with that particular issue as well. But perhaps, Chair, we are in discussion with Treasury in the context of that cluster, also with the Human Settlements Department, to begin to say how can we make these grants, the infrastructure grants, and it work better to align them with the housing grants, the neighborhood partnership grants, etc. We think, and perhaps, Chair, even this committee will perhaps maybe, as Elroy pointed out, we need to look at the Division of Revenue Act more closely. We've made, and we've been engaging with Treasury on a number of proposals. I think, for instance, the point Mr. Botha was making about, you know, some municipalities underspending, others overspending. I think the point was made in relation to provinces, but it's the same problem we're having with the Municipal Infrastructure Grant. And currently, the mechanisms in the Division of Revenue Act don't allow us to make those kinds of, you know, adjustments in year, in the financial year. And these things pose some constraints. So I think if we look at the Division of Revenue Act a bit more closely, and we are engaging with Treasury on that, that will also enable us to deal with some of the infrastructure spending issues. Thanks.
On capacity issues that you raised, capacity to spend, I think that's a perennial problem. The President's preoccupied with it. He's repeatedly said, Eurocommittee, you must hold us to account. But we have a capacity building program, and with this new system of, the new approach to cooperative governance, that's one of our key concerns. Yes, challenges are huge. We agree. We're revisiting. In fact, we want to work with you and others here. Although, you know, we should discuss what cooperative governance means. My own take on it is, when I was chair of this committee at least, is that it's neither a federalist nor a unitary system, actually. It breaks out of that mold, but it tends towards a softer form of unitarism rather than a softer form of federalism. So though we drew from Germany and so on, you know, I think we really adapted it substantially to our own needs. But if you want a developmental state, you have to have a relative cohesion and coherence. We shouldn't bother too much with labels. It's a notion of three spheres and the degree and nature and structure of cooperation and the mechanisms to ensure it, no compulsion. And when you talk about cooperative governance, we also imply, as you well know, civil society out there, need for coordination of the national department of the degree. That's very much our concern. Transfer from one department to another, can it be done from one province to another? You know as well as I can't. But, you know, philosophically, I agree. that Elroy might want to add. I'll just go to mine and then you can add lastly to save time. Who monitors the portfolio committee? Very good question. Really, we can't say for Parliament, but we imagine it's the public out there. And if you don't do your job, then people like me won't get elected either, though I'm where I am. So in effect, who monitors the portfolio committee? You monitor yourself, as I'm concerned, but as the chairperson. So for the public does out there. But it's actually a question you should put to the chairperson of the committee and yourselves. But we accept the spirit in which you're saying it. On a single public service, I think we've dealt with that already, but nowhere near adequately, and we'll find the time. Hands-on is precisely what we say, that in our constitution, you know, the way it's been interpreted and maybe the way it's meant to be, and we have to question that, that no matter what happens, the national and provincial government can't intervene in certain situations where local government doesn't deliver. And Section 130 and 139, as I said, even within the current framework, we want to be more hands-on without being unconstitutional. That's what we're saying. The sort of thing you will agree with. On the recession, you're absolutely right. I think we, well, Chairperson raised this earlier as well, saying enough about LEDs, the importance of decent work, MIGs and how they can clear that. I really think it's a good point that's being made. We're not doing enough of that. We will come back to you on that. Shlavi, please note it. Yes, please note it. Land Use Management Act, I think, I don't know enough about that. I'll read you on the response.
I think the only point that we would make here is that I think this department, this new department, given our new mandate, we would want to interact with Parliament quite closely on that. I think that would be our view at this point. But because currently it was driven by the old Department of Land Affairs. That's my understanding.
I just want to add finally that members of our department have not been speaking here. This is not the norm, as I imagine. It's just because it's a rush thing. But obviously, when they come to Cape Town, they will participate. As I understand it, when the department is more organized and we have more time, you know, more of the people will engage. I also want to say finally that, you know, particularly members of the opposition, if you want clarity on questions, you can always phone me. I'm still on the same cell number and so on. But there are issues that there are protocol and other issues that the committee chair will guide me on. But I know there's nothing stopping you from asking clarity on issues that you've raised. And finally, that from our side, we just want to, well, I think I should let you know that, you know, Willem Durman says, well, you know, it's good that you're here because, you know, you understand the legislation. And I said earlier, it's good that the minister is here. The chairperson is here because he was MEC for local government and a civic activist, and he's been chairing this committee for the past 5 years. Perhaps you should know why he's been deployed here, and I. Both of us have been deployed here because they feel they want to punish us because we both came with this model of local government. He was on the white paper committee, and I was a backbencher at the time. So can I suggest that the chair that's more responsible than I am for the current model? I merely became chair after he shaped that white paper, and all I did was vigorously implement the model and make changes here and there. Peter might not agree, but we did agree to some things the opposition said. So I think the idea was that we're going to punish you people. The very legislation and philosophy and model you've got, we want to change it, but not substantially. We're not throwing the baby out of the bathwater. There are many, many good things in it, many good things. There are some things that I think 15 years down the road, Comrade Chair, you'll also agree. We were a bit too ambitious, and we underestimated capacity issues and other issues at local government level. But the aim is to retain three spheres, to ensure cooperative governance, to implement it more effectively. We're not fundamentally changing any of the core principles of the model, but we are agreeing finally that local government is extremely challenged. And when you say go door to door, to some extent, I must tell you, the reports I'm reading will be very similar to what you're going to say and what the chairperson says, even though these department officials haven't necessarily gone door to door in their personal capacities working for different parties. They might have. That is their right, I think. I don't know what the laws say. But can I just say finally that local government is extremely challenged. We need your help. We really must turn it around. We're evolving a turnaround strategy. 2011 is looming, and we must get it right. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister and Elroy, and on behalf of the department and all the others who responded. We appreciate your responses to our questions, and that's very important. Just to make a couple of points, part responses to some of the issues already raised.
The problem of instability in institutions and organizations is a global phenomenon. And people are learning skills to be able to operate in what almost is like in code, permanent instability, to be able to operate effectively. In other words, it is no longer an abnormal thing for situations to tend to be conflictual and so on, such as may be happening in local government, for example. But the people who are working there cannot operate with the skills they've had all these years. In other words, appropriate skills that needs to be acquired for dealing with those issues that happen as they do now. So this is the one capacity issue that all departments, and especially the one that sits where it is. I was cut by when I look at this document, including what is called provincial and local government, amongst the economic sector, not as part of the central government department. I would have thought this is central. Cooperative governance is central. So even its location and how it is conceptualized, where it belongs up there with others that are considered central. It straddles three spheres just for that reason on its own. That's why it should belong there. That's the first point I thought I want to make. But also that, and therefore, the skills you need when you're operating in this department are particularly important to look at. And the DORA issue. You see, the proposal that Honorable Botha suggests, we, in fact, it has happened. And the problem is, and this is where the development of state comes in. You see, if we are not decisive and agile, we will not respond properly to that. One of the ex-members of this parliament, a suspect committee, Anemeya, says to me, listen, it was okay. We understood why you took our money to another district. Now we are ready. Why is it not coming back? We are ready. And people knew we received that money. It was taken from us. We were not ready. Why is it not coming back now? Because, unfortunately, it's no longer available. Now, what we are creating is that we are creating trouble in that particular district. So that solution has also its downsides to it. It was done precisely for the reason you are suggesting, but it has its terrible downsides. Because the question of capacity, capacity and its development can defy the time frames you want to work with it. So that's the problem with it. So we must find a way in which we can speed up this expenditure dynamics that we are saying are so important. Agency, Deputy Minister and the department is the watchword with which I assume the mandate of the majority party defines this 5-year period. And what it means is really that we should be alert to what's happening in the provinces, in national departments, and in local government on matters that affect the work that we do collectively in the sector. It would be useful to know, as a committee and members of this committee, what you are doing about those things when they occur. We don't have to agree with you, but we have to know that you are aware you are doing something about it of one kind or another, and at some stage we will engage. So we would greatly appreciate speedy communication of such issues, even when you have not finalized your positions. We know, but that you are aware, you are working with it. I feel better confident to respond when I'm asked about those issues. I would imagine members of this committee as well will feel that way when they are asked whenever, what is the department, what are you doing about this? No, we know the department is onto this thing. They are going to come back to us. When they give their responses, we will do that. So that's why it is strategically important to communicate with us as a committee timelessly, even about things that are emerging, that you are going to have to develop responses, even when those responses are not ready. It's never harmful to communicate fast, on time, and regularly. It helps. So we would appreciate that. Members, thank you very much. I assume that our boss here has organized lunch. No. Unfortunately, no. He says no lunch. Thank you very much. We appreciate your input. Members of the ANC, shall we meet before you go?